And welcome to In-Game Chat for Saturday, July 21st, 2012. This is Season 6, Episode 11. I'm Scott.
I'm James.
And I'm Matt.
That's all we got this week. We open up the show talking about the Nexus 7. Moving into your tweets and your emails, from the tweet side of things, we get asked about Steam's Greenlight service, which doesn't roll out until the end of August, but we go over our thoughts on that. Plus, that brings up Steam sales and the Steam sale that we got, that we were wondering where it was last episode, and we got it by the time this episode rolls around, and what we picked up on there. The Ouya console, whatever it is, that strange Kickstarter device that made millions in just like its first week, which rolls us into the Blamey Arcade at Kickstarter and our thoughts on that. We get asked about the Fez situation, Xbox Live Arcade, and our thoughts on how that's become interesting. Moving on to emails, we get emails about Eve and Rift. We get an email about Star Wars 1313, the maturity in games that doesn't actually deal with sex, drugs, and violence, but mature themes, mature stories, stuff like that. Creepy environments in games. Guild Wars 2 is discussed. PlanetSide 2 is mentioned as well. And also, not much Batman movie discussion, because the two of these guys here haven't seen it, and I have. But we do give some thoughts on the previous Batman films. So that's all in this episode. If you'd like to get in touch with us, you can. It is our email address is everyone@ingamechat.net. You can send us a tweet on Twitter. We read those. Our name there is @InGameChat. You can also get to us on the forums at colonyofgamers.com. We have our forums there, and you can talk to us. You can also Steam friend us. You're friend us on Steam, friend us on Xbox Live. We're all over the place, and all the info you need to know to find that out is there at colonyofgamers.com. So, here's the episode. Thanks for listening, and enjoy the show. I have a bigger version.
Yeah.
Of that same model.
Have you... Did you guys see the Google's own brand?
The Nexus?
The Nexus 7?
Yeah. The IT guy at work is thinking about getting one.
Jeremy and I really, really want them.
I was looking at it, too. I was like, fuck, man. I could throw $200
at that. It's right between these two things.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's, it looks like it's really designed to be less... Like, it's got a horrible camera on it. It's the 7-inch instead of the 10. But it looks like it's basically the same, like Jeremy and I were talking about, it's basically the same, this is great, it fits in my pocket, but anything more than whatever is a pain in the ass. That is wonderful, but it's just big enough that it's got to go in something.
Yeah.
But just like a Kindle, that 7-inch tablet could fit like right in your cargo pocket. Yeah. Perfectly. So... I am kind of
tempted,
kind of itching to get one of those.
Yeah,
I think I could use it a lot, particularly at work. We'll have to see. He was thinking about, you know, buying them for the theater because there are several people in the building that we would like to give tablets to for what they do. So, because they're not allowed to use laptops during rehearsals,
too loud for the fans.
You know, it's the keys.
Oh.
Jeffrey hates the sound of keystrokes in the rehearsal hall. But the stage managers absolutely need to be able to use a computer for everything that they do, for note-taking, for scheduling, for sending and receiving emails. So, but mostly, I don't have a tablet. And it would be that nice in-between, I think, for $200.
You can always go for a little bit cheaper and get the Inspire. Or no, the Edify. That's what
whatever. When Ars Technica did their review of the Nexus 7, they were completely incredulous that it was $200 worth of hardware.
Yeah.
They are absolutely convinced Google's selling it at a huge loss because it's obscenely powerful. They said it runs...
That's obscenely cheap, too.
Yeah, it's just too cheap. But it's their own thing, which means that unlike other Android devices, it doesn't suffer from vendor lockout. It'll always be the Nexus devices always have the most current version,
and if that's what gets them in the foot, you know, their foot in the door,
it's a long and storied and often successful tradition of selling your hardware at a loss.
And Lavos is in the chat room. He says the Nexus 7, it's really nice. He got one at the Google I.O.
Oh, shit, really?
Yeah, some of the best hardware that Asus has produced.
That's what I'm saying. And, I mean, Asus in general always produces excellent shit. So it seems to me to be a really perfect confluence of price point, size. I actually am much more attracted to the 7-inch model.
If you got a question, just shoot it out there and he'll answer it in the chat room, but I don't know what you want to know.
Is the camera really as shitty as they were saying? Because the Ars Technica review made it look like a nasty first-gen phone camera.
But, I don't know, how often do you use your camera on your iPad?
Well, this one is
with the exception of the forward-facing.
This one's forward-facing only, which, again, from a more, not necessarily productivity, but from a more utilitarian standpoint. Skype. I just want it for Skype.
Yeah.
Yeah, really.
That's all I would ever want.
That's right. The only thing I use, you know, FaceTime with the forward-facing.
Sure. I mean, and again, even if it's a poo-ass camera, and you're getting the basic idea across on Skype, I guess it's not that big a deal, but really seemed like the camera was like one of the only bad things. But I mean, even the form factor, so it was really excellent to hold, had a great great balance between weight and in the right spot of weight, you know, heavy enough to feel good, light enough to be useful.
Comfortable in your pocket.
Yeah, I really like it. As much as I need another video card, I feel like I could, you know, tighten my belt a little bit and buy one of those.
He says he didn't even try it. He gave it to a coworker since he has a 4G iPad 3.
Oh, I see. Okay.
So he just gave it to a coworker.
Well, that's perfectly understandable. I mean, I'm probably just talking myself into liking it so much because I can't even come close to affording an iPad.
The weight is great. Really one hand holdable.
Yeah.
Yeah. These iPads are not, you can hold them in one hand, but not for very long before it's just really...
Yeah, they're kind of... Especially if you have a case, too.
Yeah.
You know, gets a little...
Well, to my mind, my tastes, the Nexus is everything I want in a tablet. And the Microsoft tablet is everything I do not want. You know? If you can understand, like, I just feel like they've gone too far.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like everything about that system is going to put you in a price range where you would be best just buying an Ultrabook, because that's how they're going to be priced. And there's no way their battery life is going to be significant at all. The Nexus 7, at full volume, full brightness, watching streaming video. So basically, they did a test watching Netflix with everything maxed out. It got over 9 hours.
Oh, wow.
Of constant activity.
That's nice.
It's exceptional. Which puts it, I mean, that's important to me because that's a whole work day, you know? 9 hours would get me through a work day of doing whatever I had to do, marching around the building, taking care of little nitshit network problems, or being over at the apartments taking care of their network problems.
He says that 9 hours for its weight is best in class.
Yeah. It's really kind of an astonishing little piece of work. I think, actually, I'm kind of desperate to buy one before Google figures out that they fucked up and they priced it all wrong or something, or they go back and they take all the good guts out, or they make Asus do some horrible thing to it. I don't know. It just seems too good to be true, but I haven't heard anybody say it isn't true. So I'm super duper excited about it because I feel like an asshole using this phone all the time.
Well, in this case, I would say so. I get that. All right, jumping into the tweets. We're going to go into StarStealer22, who says, I'm dead serious about the arm thing in Batman. Just veer the camera around to his front and you will see. Apparently it's the same way in Arkham Asylum. I don't think any of us have tried this yet, but he was the one that wrote in and said that...
Said that his arm was big.
Yeah, yeah.
It was like his right arm, right? Because it was like an over-the-right-shoulder third-person POV.
And it was really... just huge, and
maybe
so
his left arm's an atrophy from, you know, not using it.
I haven't done anything to check on that.
You have the game?
Yeah.
Okay, well then
load it up sometime.
When we're done,
just load it up.
Load it up. I want to see his big ass arm.
Yeah, I do too.
It's probably one of those can't unsee phenomena.
Once you see it, yeah.
Right.
Nabokov says, pretty interesting thing, the Steam Greenlight thing that they've got going on, where I guess the community chooses what indie games go on sale or something?
No, well, not on sale, but which things get a place
cheaper
in the Steam library.
Right.
Not in the library, but
in the sale
catalog. Right?
No.
It's not about choosing which things go on sale for a cheaper price.
I didn't mean for a cheaper price. I meant
for
public
sale.
Consumption.
Right. We're not English. We say for sale, not on sale, or something like that. Like it's different because right now there's an internal process. Every submitted game must go through before it gets a place in the store, and they're going to crowdsource that process. They're going to externalize it. And we're going to be able to vote on what gets a place in the Steam catalog.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Which could be the reason that we're doing votes right now.
Yeah.
It does seem like a little bit of
like
an introductory or a test bed thing. Although, it's not exactly a test bed. They give us three things. I click on a radial. One of them wins. It's
Age of Empires 3 won. Yay. Yeah.
I voted for it.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
I'm curious though, because I have no idea exactly how rigorous the process has been historically for getting a game on Steam. So I don't know how successful. We're just going to trust that they've done their homework and their Valve and that they sort of know what they're doing. But how successfully a crowdsourced version of the program is going to work. Second, what's the big deal? Exactly. Like, what exactly is the big deal? You don't have shelves. You are a digital storefront. So, I understand the application process and different sort of selection criteria for these bullshit devices.
But if anyone passes all that stuff, then why not be...
Right. The criteria isn't quite as much like content or possibility of success or anything like that.
Yeah.
You have to be compliant in a number of ways. And I know that they don't like, they don't like things that are necessarily excessive amounts of objectionable material. So, and I'm sure that Valve is doing it the same way. I just don't know what their thresholds have been. So I don't exactly know why there would have to be such an intense process. It's like, well, are you saying you've only got X number of slots per Y amount of time to fill independent games? Are we talking about things that are already fully funded and available for sale? Or are we willing to tie in to some degree with the crowdfunding exercises? Like, self-fundings, donations.
Is this just going to be for independent games? Or
I believe so.
I don't
believe this is for publisher catalogs. I believe this is for
I know.
Why in the world? Let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
Tell me which game you just think doesn't belong on Steam for sale.
Doesn't belong?
Yeah.
No, there's games I want on there.
No, but my point is, if there is a voting thing. For if the question is to vote for something that isn't there, if it's not there, my vote is yes.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
If it's a big publisher thing, or if it's a part of a larger publisher's catalog, then I don't understand that exactly. All I understand is the way they're presenting it must be there's a limited room of whatever type of room we're talking about. And only a certain number of things can get in at a time. Therefore, you have to decide which of all the possible games, which of all the entries are we going to allow in. Because otherwise, it's not a question of this belongs and this doesn't. Games that are not on Steam belong on Steam,
yeah.
In my opinion.
Yeah.
And that's...
Just so that I can just get rid of my plastic discs. You know? I would love
I have SWAT three... cardboard boxes, three significantly large cardboard boxes at home full of plastic discs that I'm throwing away because A, they either do not work anymore, absolutely just do not work, or B, I have them on a digital delivery service.
Yeah.
And any opportunity to add to my library, I know that I'm I know that I'm feeding the future monster of Steam issues that's going to prevent me from playing them. But we're so far beyond caring at this point. Whatever. I know.
How many hundreds of dollars
I'm aware of the supposed evil that I do.
Yeah.
And of putting every game ever on Steam, and as well as other places. Not just on Steam, but make it available.
But most of your eggs in one basket kind of thing can really bite.
But you're also pushing 40, so it's not like you got to worry about...
Wow. The chances of Steam going down anytime. Well... I mean, it's not a life expectancy thing, though, because...
No.
The other part of that is it's not like I'm about to grow up any minute.
No.
So, Steam's going to probably remain valid for a while. But, yeah.
I was just looking over the overview of the thing, and there wasn't much to answer your questions. There were general, like, what games should be used? They don't specify a certain genre. They just say developers have to provide this, 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 and this in order for your game to be considered. It didn't say that you must be an indie title or that this is a system for indie titles. It's just a system for games to be published through Steam or to be available through Steam.
Okay.
The team that they have that makes the selection process is becoming too small in order for the amount of submissions that they're getting. GT Chris in the chat room said, you think with the amount of money they make, it allowed them to increase that team. But I guess it's a good way to get the community involved even more, which is something that they point out in the overview, that not only does this take care of that problem of not having enough people to go through all this stuff and make these decisions, it also builds a community for that game before it's even released.
That's a good point. They may be taking their goddamn time, like they do about everything, but they are moving as fast as Valve ever moves on this community involvement initiative.
They make very deliberate steps.
How many times in the past? How many times in the past sales or the past themed, potato sack? You know, that wasn't a sale. I mean, it was a sale on indie games, but it was all related to Portal.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the things to make your achievement or to get your little badge, which is something else they rolled out with this whole situation with the community voting, was join this community. Join the potato sack community. Join the summer camp community. Join the holiday gift community, whatever it was. You know, if you join these communities, you get an achievement for this. But they want you to join. I don't do a damn thing with those communities, honestly.
Yeah.
I don't. And so I'm not exactly sure their purpose.
Exactly sure we've seen their ultimate purpose.
Right. I mean, COG's got a community on there, but we use our forums as our discussion place, not there, which is something that can be done. If you've got a guild, a league, or something like that for TF2 or something like
that. Most things I would see for COG is the TF2 Tuesdays and stuff.
Right. So you've got that sort of thing over there that you would probably use that for. But
But this is also, this reminds me somewhat of their stated goal of having user and player ratings, behavior trends, things like that influencing prices, availability, rewards, awards, all of those things. They really, I don't want to say that they seem to be dumping a lot of their own behaviors, their own management behavior off onto the player base. I see them doing that, but in a way empowering the player base. I'm curious as hell about how this is going to work. I don't mean to think that they don't know what they're doing.
No.
I see all the gaps, and I'm
looking forward to seeing what they do to fill those in.
Very much.
It rolls out at the end of August.
Okay.
That's a hell of a fast timetable for them to do anything.
One thing I noticed recently, the Thief 1 and 2, they put back in on Steam.
Because
before it was just 3.
Right.
So, I mean, if they're starting to get some of the old catalogs...
Well...
Not that I'd want to buy Thief 1 and 2.
You know how incredibly mysterious their process is. They've never really told anybody how anything actually works. Which is, still at the heart of what happened between Valve and EA. Yeah.
But they never said anything.
No, and EA only said a little bit. And they restored Crysis 2.
Yeah, I noticed that.
Thank God. Because that shit was cheap.
I'd already bought it on Origin, so I didn't buy it again.
I missed that day.
Yeah.
That sale that day, I missed it. That was one of the things you had to go through Facebook for? Is that correct?
Whatever. Our power was out, and I did it through my phone.
I think that was one of those things, and I missed that particular day.
Yeah, I can't. No.
It was something different?
It was something different.
But it was on Origin. It was a sale.
They were having a sale, because I also picked up Bulletstorm that same time.
That seems odd to me. I picked up...
What'd you buy?
Bulletstorm, Mirror's Edge, and Mercenaries 2.
Yeah.
During that particular
Before
sale.
We found out that they didn't have their server.
But in any case, it doesn't really matter. They restored it over there.
Right.
And I got over $11.50 or whatever it was, which is fantastic. Cheaper than they have any of their stuff on sale for.
Which, since we're talking about this, what have you guys bought through the sale? Is that going to take you a while?
A little bit. I mean, I'm trying to remember. I'm looking through my...
Luckily, I had all my receipts here that I can get through on my email.
I have
still $11.
What is?
Crysis 2.
11? No, that's an excellent...
No, I know. That's why I'm like, I need to buy it.
No, you need to do that. You need to do that. You're never going to... It's not going to get any cheaper. It's an EA game.
Yeah.
I bought it from EA for like 15 or 18.
Yeah.
It was under 20, but it wasn't... No, 11.
It's actually very good. It's a very good game. It's nothing like Crysis, but it's... in terms of world building and gameplay.
I mean, here we are.
Perfectly good.
This is the 21st. The sale ends tomorrow. And usually the last day is usually just... Here's a bunch of stuff. Usually. I can never... Given what they've done here, where they push the
thing
back...
This is going to be a little bit... it's going to be a little bit different, because every day... All right, what have we got different this time?
We've
got flash sales.
Flash sales, yeah.
Which are brilliant.
We get the voting. And then we got
which are a lot of fun. And then we have the daily deals, but the daily deals are always rolling over for 12 hours. And that's not something they did before. So today's daily deals, today, Saturday the 21st... Unless they change, they will run through till noon tomorrow, and then they will become yesterday's deals
for the same 12 hours. Yeah.
Just like they will just stay the deal for 12 hours and close out tomorrow at midnight, which makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
The question is, what are they going to do from noon to midnight?
Yeah.
Are they going to do like a special hurrah thing?
Fire sale?
Are the two little dudes going to join the cat guy?
Yeah, up in the treehouse.
In the rebuilt treehouse?
Yeah.
What's going on there? Is it going to be like...
A bunch of people are going to get badges for voting every day in the thing, and...
Yep.
You know.
And something.
Something
probably
else.
Nothing.
Yeah.
I'm assuming you had like some of your retroactive badges. Did you get... How long is your service award?
I'm not sure. I didn't look at the...
What kind of person are you?
A terrible person.
How long is your service award?
7.
You got 7.
Same as you.
Yeah. Jeremy only had 6.
Jeremy had 6. I saw that.
Yeah.
Service award...
How long you've had Steam?
I've had it since 2004.
Yeah, nice. but
Steam account's been since 2004.
You should check it, because Jeremy swore that he had his Steam account in 2004. And
mine actually says, you know, your account's been...
You should check your thing just to make sure.
It'll have a number there. It'll
let you know. Jeremy was very... I mocked him greatly.
I bet it burned him too.
Yeah.
It had. It's one of those.
Do you know why that happened to him?
Why?
Because he was a fucking pirate. That's why.
Oh really?
Because he wouldn't do what he was supposed to do.
Lavos in the chat room. His activation was September 12th, 2003. He's got 8.
Wow. How did you manage that?
September 12th, 2003 at 10 a.m. 9:53 a.m. is what it says.
That's actually pretty wonderful.
Steam. Wait, it's not the Steam rating. It's
go to your profile, scroll down, you'll see bad. Well, I don't know if you're doing it on your phone, so I have no idea.
I'm doing it on my phone.
I'm doing it on my iPad here, so I can check your work.
You can find it before. You can probably find it before you can find your own.
Yeah, like the phone app is, you know,
a little bit different.
Yeah.
Oh fuck, Steam Guard.
pants.
Yep. It's like, here, go do an email. Luckily, I'm using Chrome on my iPad, which thank God they're doing that now.
Oh, yeah? How's that?
It's good.
Yeah, it's very good.
I mean, it's not...
Yeah. But member since November 19th, 2004. I don't see the service number. Where's the...
Then you've got 7 years. If you're in 04, he's in 03, so he's got 8. We're in 04, and we've got 7. So
yeah, I got what Half-Life 2.
Half-Life 2 came out.
Yeah.
Lavo says there was a beta, I believe. I hopped on Half-Life 2 really quick too. So maybe he was in the beta.
Hmm. Okay, that would be fine. That would make sense.
But the games that I got, let's see, Alien vs. Predator, the new one, it was what, $4. Back to the Future, Bastion. Let's see what else wasn't here. The Burnout Paradise City. Dear Esther. The Dreamfall and Longest Journey.
Mm-hmm.
Driver San Francisco.
Somehow.
The Fear 1 and 2. I had fun with the Steam sale. Left 4 Dead 1 and 2. The Legend of Grimrock. That's a lot of fun.
I've got about 20-something hours in it already. Have you played it much at all or just a little bit?
Didn't say how many hours I have in it. But, about like the third level down, just a little bit.
I'm on level 5. That's actually been an enormous amount of fun. I kind of ran out of steam on it, but I'll get through it at least once. But you'd be surprised how really very good something built with modern-ish tech, according to very old principles, can be.
I had a game that was exactly like that on my Apple IIgs. Yeah. I forget the name of it, but it was exactly like that. Red Faction Guerrilla. The Last of the Runaway Trilogy.
Of the what?
Runaway, the adventure game.
Oh, sure.
And
I was thinking of the Tom Selleck movie.
I don't know which Tom Selleck.
With the spiders, the little
Minority Report.
Do what?
Minority Report.
What about
Minority Report? That's Tom Cruise.
Oh, Tom.
The Tom Selleck movie, the old 80s thing, yeah, the little runaway, mechanical.
And the Gene Simmons.
Yeah, bullet. Exactly.
Yeah. And, really yep, that's what I got.
Huh? I was just telling him it was an exceptionally cheesy 80s film.
Christy Alley was in it, too.
She was.
I picked up, on the first day, I picked up the indie bundle one.
I didn't buy any of the bundles. And mostly because out of every bundle I had, like, something
almost, yeah.
I was like,
I don't remember what came in this bundle, and it's not listing it here in the email, so I have no idea. What else did I pick up? Alice Madness Returns for 5. The Tribes Starter Pack for Steam.
Yes,
I picked that up. And then Binding of Isaac and Alan Wake.
Nab gifted me that.
What, the Binding of Isaac?
No.
Oh,
the Tribes
pack. Fucking A, out of nowhere, Drew, Track Zero, gifted me Skyrim today.
What?
Oh, really?
Yeah. I went to look at the sale price and I was like, what? Yeah, he gifted it to me today. I have no idea where that came from, but thank you, Drew. Yeah, Alan Wake and then Binding of Isaac, which, by the way, just last night, found my Alan Wake disc.
Oh.
I was missing it on 360. I had my box, but I couldn't find my disc, and I thought, motherfucker. And it was
better on PC.
Yeah, so I picked it up on PC for, $7 or whatever it was. $10, because I got the whole thing.
Okay, that with the American Nightmare.
Plus American Nightmare with it.
Does Alan Wake have the signal and the writer?
Yes, I believe the PC version already comes with that.
Okay.
That came with the initial PC version release thing. The next time, what did I pick up? Holy crap. A bunch of Saints Row DLC that was under $1.
Yeah.
The Walking Dead I picked up.
Oh, yeah. I beat the second episode this morning.
It's $15.
Yeah.
Right? Or $14. Why haven't I picked it up?
I don't know.
Like, why haven't I done
it? It's five games.
I know what it is. It's just... not entirely sure why I haven't picked that up.
Mm.
Is it the IP?
No, I'm fully aware of how different it is from the TV show, which I consider to be really shitty. I don't know. It's an excellent price. Mm-hmm. Just don't understand why I haven't picked it up.
And I grabbed it. It was it was on a flash deal, I think it was, or a daily deal. Frozen Synapse DLC I grabbed, and a little indie game, not an indie game, a little casual game called Cube. I grabbed that as well. What's on the next on the list? Tiny Bang Story and the Fear Pack. The Fear 1, Fear 2, Fear 3.
Yeah.
Complete Pack. I grabbed that.
I avoided that because Fear 1 is scary.
Yes, it is.
I already played through about half of it, and it scarified me.
Hiding in the corner listening to the recordings and stuff.
What, Fear?
Yeah, like they're, like when you're going through like some of the buildings, they have like answer machines. Like I hit the button, I'm like crouching down behind a desk, like listening to crazy.
It's the crouching down with your back to a wall is really the only way to listen to creepy recordings in a creepy video game.
Yes.
It's the only way you can be safe.
Speaking of creepy, I grabbed Dead Space 2.
Okay,
that was like what, $5?
$5. And then
did you play it on the console?
Dead Space 2. I didn't. I haven't played.
You played the first one.
Played the first one on the console, and I do have the first one on PC now. No.
Okay,
it's a horror game. I don't finish that.
I never thought either one of them to be particularly scary, but I enjoyed both of them a lot. I thought they were actually a tremendous amount of fun to play.
I got Need for Speed Hot Pursuit for $5. Mm. Next email was The Longest Journey in Dreamfall that I grabbed.
Yeah,
we were all over that. You missed it, man.
I missed it. Well, it popped up, and I was really busy at work, and I didn't get to leave work as soon as I wanted, so I didn't get home until like right after that sale ended.
Wasn't it like $7 for both?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. They're not terribly expensive as it
on
is,
their own,
but it sort of chaps my ass when I miss a sale of something that I wanted for that extra $3 off, you know?
Yeah.
It's ridiculous.
Because that could have been another
flash. The psychology of how we behave during it's ridiculous. It's absurd.
Like we were saying last time, I mean, going into it, it's like, all right, I got my wish list and everything. I'm like, I want to buy this game, but, you know, the sale's coming up soon.
I've been pretty good, actually. But
as long as I got something to distract me away from that, I'm pretty good. But if I'm sitting there and it's just whatever, it's
well, what
I'm
else? Over it.
Driver San Francisco, Insanely Twisted Shadow Planet, and then the other email I got was when Track Zero gifted me Skyrim.
I think I'm gonna have to get a new computer for Driver San Francisco. I've been playing it, but it's a little it pauses too much. It'll just like I'll be driving through, it just like pauses.
I haven't installed yet, although I did try to play Myst 5 again, and it worked.
Oh, awesome.
This is, again, the achievements that they were giving me from the community was post a screenshot and then post a screenshot and then start a game from your Steam catalog. Like, using the Steam client, start, play a game from it. And I fired up Myst, and I fired up Burnout. And so but Myst is working again, and I played it for a good while last week because it was working. And that I haven't played the fifth and final Myst game since it released. I've never played it. I bought it on disc. I had it. I never did the install, and just never did.
I know you're a big Myst fan.
Yeah, so it's completely. This is all brand new to me. And it's the last that it will be brand new for me. So
enjoy it.
On to you.
Well, just looking at my list here, see if I can.
I know you got Legend of Grimrock.
I did. Going through alphabetically, I spent most of my money on smaller, older, or indie things. I didn't bite a whole lot of AAA stuff that was down at a reasonable thing, largely because I played a lot of it, and as much as I'd still kind of. Arkham City would be great to have on PC as an example, but I played the dog shit out of it on the console. I don't need it again. And I had to be really good to myself and say, like, I don't need this.
Here's something else that I haven't really done much, or I haven't done at all.
For indie things, there's a bunch of them. They're so cheap. Most of them are either a part of a pack or something specific that I thought, this would be nice to have.
That's why I picked up Dear Esther.
On something. Just some cheesy, weird little thing. Or something old. And to me, having an old thing in your current catalog that is sort of difficult to come across somewhere else is a very nice thing. So, going down my list, Beyond Good and Evil, which I did not have before. Botanicula.
Mm.
That's the
the mech, yeah, the,
yeah, the mech, whole the yeah. Machinarium pack and all this stuff. Like I just bought that pack because like, I was just like, nah, fuck it, whole pack. I don't want to click on two things. I just want to click on one button to buy it all. Crysis 2 Maximum Edition. It was like the one. It's like the most expensive thing I bought, I think. Sorry, I'm having to scroll through. The Grand Theft Auto pack.
Oh, you didn't have that.
No. And I bought the whole enchilada pack, yeah. Which...
Oh, like...
Yeah.
All the GTA.
One, two, three...
Well, yeah. Because if you notice, if you look at the pack, one and two aren't available separately.
Yeah.
They're only available as part of
the pack. Other funny thing that I noticed in the Steam thread was like, well, I can... apparently for an individual game, the price was cheap, but you could buy the collection and get it for even cheaper. If you broke it down into piecemeal, it'd be even cheaper.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's exactly why I bought. Well, I mean, I bought GTA because I don't think I'll ever do it, but I never played San Andreas.
I never did either, but I've got it.
But then now I have it. I haven't played 1 and 2 in ages, you just can't really get them any other way. And they're perfect, like, stupid little desktop adventure-style things that I could play on a shitty work computer. I bought 4 for Ice Enhancer,
mm-hmm.
and nothing more.
The expansions come with that, right?
Yes.
Oh yeah. You know what? I didn't play those
because I haven't played those either.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Which to me, I looked at that. I was like, this is one of those collections where I don't have any of this on PC. There's some stuff in here I haven't done before. I would like to take a look at a mod, and some of it is for posterity. At perfect thing. So I got that whole thing.
Yeah. Even though you're used to traveling around Liberty City, if you're doing it with Lost in the Damned, it's a little bit different.
Yeah. But Legend of Grimrock.
Yeah.
Started playing it straight away. I love it. It's fun, simple, kind of adorable little dungeon crawly game. That doesn't have a lot of variety, but we'll probably have a pretty good lifespan because we're going to release a map editor, a dungeon editor for
it. Oh, good.
Sometime in the near to mid future.
I wish I could remember the name of the old Apple 2GS game that I had that was exactly like
was this. Was it exactly the same as in real-time combat, or was it turn-based? Because that's one of the things about this, is it's real-time and not turn-based. It makes it a bit different from the other first-person dungeon-crawling tile-based.
As far as the combat, honestly, I it's been
most of
so
the old
long.
Stuff was all turn based. Anyway.
Yeah, it's been so long. I don't remember, but I do remember like the spells were the same. We had to click the little different
right, right,
and like I had the four people in the square, and you know you could attack on the different side. Yeah.
But anyway, I got that. Bought Limbo finally.
Okay.
Machinarium.
I need to get that.
I bought Magicka.
Okay.
Well, you already played Limbo, though, right?
I played the demo on the console.
Oh, you never actually played it? Okay.
Never actually played it.
Okay.
I stopped right where a guy like me would stop.
I know, yeah.
Let's see what else. I skipped an enormous amount of stuff that would have been okay. Just could not bring myself to buy Saints Row. As cheap as it is.
$12, I think? What was it? I don't remember what it was down to.
I don't
see.
Really
I had
understand.
It on the console, so I didn't, you know.
I don't have it anywhere. I can't tell you exactly what the problem is. I look at it, and there's nothing wrong with it. $10, roughly.
I tell you, I'm getting more.
Keep it in my library forever.
Looking at the way it works on Steam now, because I kind of wish I had Arkham City on the PC and had not played it on the PS3, because when that DLC drops, man. I mean, I'm tempted to get it just because, like, the DLC for it is so cheap, but I realize that, no, I don't want to have to go back.
You don't want
to
go play through
that whole thing again.
And I do want to play the Harley Quinn adventure.
But it makes me think about the next time Saints Row is. Saints Row's got a shit ton of DLC.
Yes.
Most of it's useless. Most of it's just pointless. But it's got a ton, and when it's less than $1, most of it, 75 cents to 45 cents to something like that, it's like, man, that's great. That's why I bought I think, $5 worth of DLC for that game. Just a ton.
But, yeah. So, Binding of Isaac. Yes. My very favorite game of the entire sale. And I guess I'm disappointed that neither one of you bet.
Is this your joke?
No, this is not my joke. I've already forgotten my joke.
Damn it.
Train Simulator 2012.
I already owned it.
Already has
it.
Okay.
I didn't see either one of you buy it.
I already
owned it.
It's become the perfect joke of this set.
Oh, yes. What a bargain. $1,000 for discounted DLC.
Yep. I loved it. I loved that. And I actually, the game is actually really kind of cool.
I had bought that a couple of sales ago. I don't remember what it was.
December sale.
But it's
sale.
Disgustingly cheap now.
Yeah.
90%. Yeah. So it was like $1.50 or something for the base game. The whole point of the DLC is that it's supposed to be
just really
very specific things that you're interested in.
Right, they're trying to appease to everybody playing that game, not trying to appease to you must own this, you must own this.
The rumor on the internet is that there's like one guy somewhere maybe who owns all of it. Who bought all of it.
Yeah.
I believe a couple people who've been gifted the entire catalog before obviously own it, but that there is a person or two. Really, the only DLC you need is the Trains versus Zombies.
Yeah, and even that I heard was not the best from the description.
That was like $1.
Yeah, but then that's when it falls back to, but yeah, it's $1.
Yes.
So, you know, who cares? So, good stuff on the Steam sale. Right?
Yeah, and I'm not done. There are a couple things I missed that I'll probably just wind up biting at the regular sale price because the difference between the regular and the daily isn't much. I
didn't get the Soul Exodus, you know. Something like, you know, Flight Sim would be fun.
Well, Kevin and I got to doing an awful lot of talking about Microsoft Flight. I missed... He and I had agreed to buy the same thing. We could buy Alaska.
Okay.
And, you know, play Bush Pilot. But I missed the sale. So it went from its acceptable price at $5 way the fuck back up to $8. And I was like, well, I guess I'm just going to have to wait and see if it shows up again. But if it hasn't shown up again by tomorrow, I'm just going to buy it at the $8. But he bought that in one of the planes.
Okay, Bush Pilot. I mean, because I have the...
Oh, and you can multi.
Yeah.
Lavos said he picked up Insanely Twisted Shadow Planet, Penny Arcade 3, and wondered if any of us had any thoughts. I don't think any of us had played it.
No, I never finished 2, as a matter of fact.
Trying to, he picked up Binding of Isaac DLC. Here's a good one, Vessel, he picked up.
I was looking at that.
What is that?
It's a nice little indie game. It's a
side-scroller.
It's a side-scroller puzzler. I don't want to say in the vein of Abe's Exodus, but each room is a puzzle, and you have God. How do you describe that? You got these devices that you could throw into water, and sometimes the puzzle is how do I turn on this water? Once you get it turned on, you throw the device, and the water becomes sentient.
Never mind. I know.
Yes. Okay. Good.
I don't know if anybody cared or paid attention, but Total Biscuit was running a really excellent daily series.
I saw that. I didn't see any of them. I just when I went to look at his the WTF is I Want to Be the Guy rating. Okay. The sequel to the I Want to Be the Guy. I went and watched that, and over there was like all this Steam stuff. Steam sale.
Every day, kind of a few hours after the sale was posted, he would do a 15 to 20 minute long sale box thing where he walked you through absolutely every sale. And at every point, he would start with the indie bundle, and then he would walk you through the daily deals. He didn't deal with the community votes. He didn't deal with the flash sales for obvious reasons.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But he kind of ranked them, gave you his opinion on them, broke down the individual elements of the indie stuff, gave you what he considered to be his deal of the day, linked to his WTF is pages if he had done one, shot you over to the Yogg's Cast or something like that if he had not done it, and then in any necessary place plugged the shit out of PC Gaming Wiki, which everybody should do always. And it was a really excellent little daily thing you could look at and be like, okay, I need a quick and dirty rundown on the value of what's available.
Yeah,
today.
Really.
Those are really, really good. But, yes, I remember him explaining.
Yeah, Vessel Monkey Island. Island 1 and 2 he picked up. This one I'm going to mispronounce.
You don't get a cut, Matt.
No, but it's awesome.
Sayara? S-A-I-R-A? I am not sure what that is. I don't remember that name.
I don't know.
No.
Sayara? Fortune Summoners from the Reseteer guys?
Right. I should have picked up that whole pack. Why didn't I pick up that whole pack?
And he also picked up the Super Monday Night Combat pack, which I'm guessing was some like booster pack.
There's a bunch of... You know what's going to happen? Monday, I'm going to look at this and be like, why the fuck didn't I just pick up this, and this? Why did I do that?
This much. Yeah.
It was like $2.50. Why did I...
Yeah.
Why was I sitting there, you know...
Maybe it'll go down to $1.30.
Why was I scrooging over $3 when it's gone back up to $20, you know? Or even $15, because that puts it in the realm of something like... I just... $15 is more than I want to spend to just have it in my catalog as a rainy day thing, unless it's a massive deal on a AAA game.
Yeah.
But even then, sometimes I really have to care about the game, and there's so much there that I don't care about. So I need to do another pass through today and tomorrow of cheap stuff, old stuff, and indie stuff.
Mm-hmm. Arma 2 is like 12 bucks.
Huh?
Arma 2?
Arma 2 is not 12 bucks. You're looking at the wrong shit. You need
just Arma 2 by itself.
But what the fuck good is Arma 2 by itself?
Well, isn't that what you need for DayZ?
You have to have the whole thing.
You have to have that and a DLC pack.
Oh, really?
The combined operations pack.
You have to have Arma 2 CO.
17 bucks.
Yes.
Right? Well, 18.
Well, 18 bucks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ask Kevin if 18 was worth it. He's like, more so.
Well, on that point, though, there's a rumor.
Mm-hmm.
A very indistinct, kind of fuzzy rumor without any sort of details, which is exactly the wrong kind of rumor to be thinking about when you're thinking about dropping, you know, $18 on a game.
Yeah.
For a frankly shitty mod. Fun and creative, but let's be honest, DayZ is
alpha still.
It's gross right now. It's really, really gross. But we're pretty sure that's going standalone.
Okay.
Maybe by September.
Sort of like a Day Defeat did back when it was a mod and then Valve.
No, it's because it's not going to go straight to a retail standalone. Part of the rumor, like the second part or another part, is that it's going to look a little more like Minecraft. Just buy it while it's in its shitty alpha state and you'll receive all the updates from now until forever. A further rumor is that it's going to be roughly the cost of what, you know, maybe 20, 25 bucks, something like that. Maybe as much as what Arma 2 is going for right now. An additional element of the rumor is that if you buy Arma 2, or if you own Arma 2, rather, then you'll get this thing later.
Because I mean, obviously, the only reason why I'm interested in Arma 2 is for the DayZ.
I understand that it's a clever game and that it's very fun and that a lot of people have an interesting time. I don't care. Don't want to play Arma 2. I only want to play DayZ.
Yeah.
And following it as much as I have through the community and watching YouTube videos and talking to people who have played it and to some degree still are playing it, I'm not even 100% sure I really, really, really want to play it right now. The only thing I can think is that the number of people that have bought this fucking game in the last
week,
month, whatever.
And today.
Yeah, might increase the
have increased it to such a point that maybe what I've been reading the game was 2-3 weeks ago will change somewhat. I don't really like the way some of the existing players started to behave in their opinions about how the game should work and everything. I think maybe something it really needs is a lot of new players, but I don't know. I'm not playing it right now. Yeah. I love the idea. I really love the idea, but I love the idea of a standalone DayZ more.
Yes.
So I'm going to think about it. I'm just assuming that the deal won't expire until
right.
You know,
I got it in my cart, but I don't. I haven't pulled the trigger, but it's in there ready to go. So
my biggest problem so far with the Steam sale is hard drive space. I've had to uninstall
you
some of my old.
Don't have to install the things that you buy.
No, but like, you know, I want to test them out. So like, I went back through and I'm like, all right, uninstall all these games that I don't.
So
really
have you been
play.
Like, you've been trying them out as you buy them?
Mm-hmm. And I found out, like...
You're a different breed than I.
Yeah. I buy that... Man, just going through my list now, I'm like, oh, I guess I bought... No.
Oh, by the way, remember everything I just mentioned? I haven't installed a single damn thing of what I've
bought. I have installed some stuff.
I found out...
You got Grimrock in there, I know.
Yeah, Grim, I actually installed GTA 4, just because I was super curious to see how it ran.
It's already installed on mine from when I bought it, whenever it was, yeah, so...
I think I installed Crysis 2.
Again,
because I was in a mood for like, I've been in a mood that I need to shoot something.
Yeah.
So, I'm sorry.
Well, with the iPhone app and with the app, you know, for the Steam app, once I bought it, you could actually set remotely install it. So I'm like, okay, yeah. I'm sitting at work. I'm like, remote install that way I can play it when I get home.
So you were very much like, yeah, you're like. Lucy and Ethel on the chocolate candy conveyor belt.
Stuffing everything
just on as the
first day. Yeah, just
come
out, wow, wow. Right?
Yeah. Well, the hard drive that my Steam is on is only like 500 gig.
Yeah, mine's only 500.
You know, in my laptop, so. And I'm thinking about maybe, you know, time to get an actual desktop and, you know, throw in my terabyte, you know, have that for my Steam library.
Yeah. Desktops still aren't going anywhere.
No. Yeah, my laptop's a couple years old. I think I got it.
You could just put a bigger hard drive in your laptop.
Do they make terabytes that'll fit in the...
I think so. No, they make them bigger than 500. Pretty sure that you can get a terabyte drive for your laptop. But you want a better computer anyway.
Yeah.
So, nothing to worry about there.
Next tweet... Oh, I'm sorry.
No, I just wanted to kind of, like, wrap up that, you know, that go-round of the sale by at least wondering, like... Because right now, today, as of this recording, we don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. The dream, obviously, is that everything that was on a daily deal comes back for another daily deal. And that the community vote will be Portal 3, Half-Life 3, or Team Fortress 3, and you get to vote on which one they make and release. And then whichever one wins instantly goes on sale.
Yeah. We've had them done all this time, we're just waiting.
Somebody did a mock-up over on Reddit of the... I say they did it, whatever, it was posted there. One of the votes was Half-Life 3 full price or was it Half-Life 3? Yeah, it was Half-Life 3 0% off.
Right.
Or everything else in the library 99% off.
Yep. And Half-Life 3 would win.
Yeah.
Without a doubt.
But,
unless 4chan got really involved.
Yeah, no kidding. The next tweet comes from Padmas, who says, just listen to episode 9. It was very interesting to hear James basically mirroring Penny Red on the subject of Laura Croft. Laurie Penny is who he's talking about. I'm happy to hear gamers I respect talking about this.
Now that's become more interesting since, because the devs have released, or let me try to get this correct. They offered an extended playthrough to certain members of the press at a specific event, where they could look at that scene in more detail.
More context.
In more context and in more detail, and you could see it all the way through. And the thing now is, see, it was implied sexual assault,
but no matter which way you play through the scene, nothing actually happens. The suspicion is, you didn't show that before. So either you didn't show that there, you didn't set people's minds at ease on purpose, even though you knew that scene would result in essentially nothing, that either way, she doesn't get raped or otherwise sexually assaulted. Or
you went back and...
Or you went back and you changed it.
Yeah.
And I don't...
No wish.
Trust any of you. I just don't trust you.
Yeah.
That's a piece of cynicism that I'm not really willing to let go of. It seemed too deliberate for me. Maybe they were just looking to stir the controversy. If that's the case, I'll give them a pass. Because I think it was worth talking about. And I think... It's just worth saying, like, you stop right there. Just stop. This isn't a thing we need. Don't worry about it. Don't do it. A, because reasons. And B, because you can do better. You can do better than suggesting that that's the most appropriate way to threaten her. I didn't like it. I'm glad it's not a thing.
Yeah. Gerst Nordson's in a tweet and says, the idea of the Oya is interesting, but I can't help but think it'll exacerbate the problem of piracy because it is hackable.
Anytime I think of something that acts as a console, even when I think of my PC, which I built myself, and it's a PC, right? It's as sort of broad as a thing can be. I feel like I can pin it down. I know what it is. I know where it fits in the world. I know what its job is. And I can define that gap between my PC and my console very clearly. And I know what the consoles are. I know what each one does and what its strengths and weaknesses are. But they're all pretty much the same thing.
Yeah.
You know, they're what they are. This thing, I don't know where it goes.
All over the map.
Yeah. And is that any good? And is any kind of console at all what you want to be, or not saying, do you want any sort of console to be the kind of thing that you can't pin down and define easily? It just looks like a mess waiting to happen. Not a destructive mess, marrying, although that could be correct. Could do favors for piracy. I don't really know, but Not to be all glorious master race or anything, but there's nothing a PC can't do. If a console can do it, a PC can do it. The PC's taught the consoles how to do everything. Mm-hmm. So if there's something that's not being handled in the environment right now, the PC can do it. And chopping it up nicely and wrapping it up cleanly and trying to deliver it to market under a brand name is really a consumer problem, not a tech problem or a hardware problem.
Yeah.
They're
not filling a need,
you know what I mean?
In a way.
We should talk about this first just to provide context for the listeners. Digital Hughes says, there seems to be a lot of excitement for it, but I'm not sure why. Not that there isn't some potential good, but what is capturing people's minds about it that has so much buzz? And that reminded me to say, we should explain what the hell we're talking about to people who haven't heard about this. As to what it is that this thing... It's a digital delivery console thing?
I believe that's right. I think that's right.
Yeah.
But it's...
It hooks up to your TV...
Yeah.
You know, pre-assembled, and it's Android-based, correct?
I don't know.
I'm looking at an article here that mentions that, but...
You've got the information, and I haven't done enough reading on it.
Right, well, this is just talking about the hackable aspects of it, so it doesn't have that much details on it. A $99 Android game console that you connect to a TV with a high-concept developer ecosystem that's as free as can be.
Jesus Christ. The second half of that sentence can fuck off. Read the second half of that sentence again.
With a high-concept developer ecosystem that's as free as can be.
The only person on Earth that should be able to say that is Kevin Butler.
Any developer will be able to publish games, claims the listing, and all games will be free to play. Even the underlying hardware is built to be hacked. Every customer who buys a retail box will get a dev kit in the bargain, so says the site.
The hardware's, again, is... Yeah, any developer can release a game on the PC. That's why the PC is so brilliant, and that's why the modern indie revolution, because anybody can do it. It's a perfectly open and democratic and hackable thing. Perfectly. It is its own fucking dev kit. It's not hard. Conceptually, clearly, the work is hard. But the only thing about that sounds... Whatever the hell high concept actually means, which we all know exactly what it means, but the one part of that that seems to me to be the linchpin is, really, everything's free to play.
Yeah.
Everybody's just going to show up and make free-to-play games on this. Yeah.
Digital Hue says it sounds like a set-top Android box. GT Chris says, yeah, pretty much nailed it, but quite reasonable hardware, it seems, at a very nice price. I'm almost tempted to kickstart it since they'll ship one to Japan for only $20.
That's actually a really good reason. Hack the sales system.
Yeah. It seems like it could be a very affordable 1080p capable media box with some interesting indie experiences. Sure, you can hook up a PC to your TV, but not for $99, I guess.
Hook up a Raspberry Pi to your TV.
Huh?
The $35 Raspberry Pi? Little PC boards? Oh, holy shit. Really?
Who are you talking to?
Oh, my God. People who read the internet? For fuck's sake. It's not like a secret. Look, I get the price point. We're talking about a desktop. I get that. I get it. But is the niche really that wide, or are we just looking for something that this supposed piece of hardware can do to make it sound reasonable? Because it's talking about being an open source, hack-friendly, hack-advantageous little piece of hardware that's really trying to do something other than just be an HD Android set-top box, which, again, that's fine. If that's what they were selling it as, I could sort of look at it and understand it. But they're selling this thing as a gaming device.
A gaming system.
Here's my problem. Here's why I'm being the way I'm being. I don't fucking trust it. How many times... I'm not saying, like, armies of guys with fake consoles have shown up, but how's your Phantom doing?
Yeah.
Right? How is all of this stuff doing? I'm missing that uniquely American entrepreneurial drive, I'm sure, but I feel like something about the nature of the console market, the console, you know, perfectly packaged, shows up in a cute box, does all the things for you that you don't feel like doing.
Yeah.
Requires investment and management at a level that doesn't really allow for plucky upstarts.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Who succeeds with consoles? Really big guys.
Mm-hmm.
Really big, and even outside.
And even really big guys fail.
Yeah, and I know that this is not trying to do that. I know that they're going a separate direction. So maybe that's a bad comparison. In a certain way, I think it really is. But I'm telling you, I got worlds of plucky upstart over there on my PC. Along, of course, we're not talking about my GPU or my CPU, but. Just as far as what can be done over there, I'm happy with that. And I'm merely distrustful of this thing. I don't know what it's trying to do.
Yeah.
But what, $100?
Yeah.
Is that what we're talking about?
$99, yeah.
I mean, did I run my fucking mouth about a half an hour ago over how $200 is nothing for a 7-inch tablet? So.
Right.
I suppose I can't really hate something that's only trying to charge me $100.
Well, the question still remains on that. It's what they were asking, Digital Hughes was asking in the chat rooms, like, why is, outside of the actual hardware and platform, I find it interesting that a box like this is getting so much attention. Is this a space that needed to be filled? With the attention, it seems like it's filling, it's fitting a space for someone. I'm just not sure who. I guess the question I have is, who is this box for?
Yeah. It's an that's actually kind of cool because it is getting an awful lot of attention. So there's a fascination with it. I'm even kind of fascinated with it. While at the same time thinking that it has no business being around. Yeah. I can't reconcile those two things.
You can be fascinated with it, but not wanting it in your house.
I guess. I mean, yeah.
We should get Scott to buy one.
I wish it worked like that.
It used to work like that anymore.
It used to work like that anymore. pretty well.
But it does not work like that.
It also used to be 2004, and we were all Scrooge McDucks with our own money bins, comparatively.
Compared to today, yes.
Yeah.
GT Chris says it could be it could just be the first in a line of Android set-top boxes from various providers. And he asked the question, the first step towards Dennis Dyack's one console future.
That one console future has taken its time.
Yeah.
That idea has shown up at this is
several.
Here's an interesting thought. Here's an interesting thought. And if I were if that little like that 2.5% of my soul that's actually extremely fascinated with economics had been a much bigger part, and I could have studied this sort of stuff. Times like now would be make for a really fascinating study. Because I think this sort of shit starts creeping up through the cracks. Weird shit starts happening in the game's hardware, software, and delivery market. Somewhere on the same turn of what we consider to be the console life cycle. And the consoles have a life cycle.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm pretty sure that there are a lot of things in the market that don't seem directly related that are either A, heavily influenced by what the market does as the console stuff rolls over every 5 to 7 years, or B, are a corollary to it without being directly related. Like they're both just symptoms of some other thing that's happening in the market. But weird creative failures and other assorted, like, funny business seems to show up when there's this moment, like this pause.
Before the next.
The GPU cycle, like, had a bit of a burp in the last 6 months, right? The 600 series and the 7000 series cards are out. But even those things are, like, the jump in quality of current GPUs, the current generation compared to last generation. Although technically last generation was a half step for AMD, you know, like it's been a weird thing, man. They're not like turning earth over the way they used to, you know, where it was just like bam, 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 lots of aggressive updates through the whole DirectX 8, 9, 10, 11 series. They've been at a pause. The CPU stuff has kind of been at its own sort of market plateau for a while.
Well, so much with the electronics, you could almost, you know, set your watch to the cycle. You know, every 5 years
for it used
console,
to work that way.
Moore's Law, you know, but now they're saying Moore's
Law. It used to be more evident. And
but
it's,
now
a bit, it's a bit murkier and a bit
nebulous in a way.
Yeah, it is. And the consoles are at exactly that place where they always get. You're at that. It's like the whole market sort of heaves and then sort of. It pauses, like it moves into a vacuum for a while. There's just no energy in it anymore. There's some games come out, but nobody puts anything behind it. There's no weight behind it. All the weight is happening, or it's being. Everything's happening somewhere else. We're waiting on the new tech. And I just feel like, in general, you reach these points where every little element of the sector, like the tech sector for whatever it is, on the whole. Everything on the goddamn NASDAQ slows down for a second, and you wait for that evolution. And I mean, I know the Phantom is wasn't looking to compete with the 360 and the PS3, but it was something that happened kind of earlier on. You know, maybe it's just people see an opening. You know, it's not wall-to-wall Microsoft, Sony, and Nintendo. So maybe they look a little weaker. I don't know. Maybe that's where the gap is. I sure as hell can't tell.
Yeah.
Well, or you look at something like things like Gaikai and online,
yeah,
and on live, where I mean, they're not doing essentially what this box would do, but it's sort of the same. But it's sort of that principle of here is a very low cost investment for a consumer, and damn if apparently it didn't work, or you know, or it did work, you know. At least in on live's case, fuckers are still kicking around. I barely turn my thing on other than check and make sure all my connections are made on my box down there. That's about it. But it's there. It's that option that's there, and it's apparently surviving. So maybe they look at that and they think, well, we can do this. I mean, if this survives, surely we can make it. I don't know. It's a hell of a thing to get into that game.
I mean, consoles wise, I wonder. I mean, can we really support? Can the market support three consoles? I mean, the Dreamcast failed.
The Dreamcast didn't fail because of any sort of external forces. Yeah, the Dreamcast failed because of bad management.
But, I mean, same with the Nintendo. I mean, like, they used to be more prominent. Now they're, you know, sort of...
But...
Passe.
Again, the chances are that it really is more likely to be the result of bad management.
Yeah.
More likely than not.
Can you really remember a time when you had three strong...
Well... It's going to seem like that because someone's always going to be doing much better.
Yeah.
I think the question is, can you have three people trying to do exactly the same thing? Probably not. The costs are prohibitive, making games. What we can't really support is our history of AAA development. Can't do it. Even the stuff that makes money doesn't make enough money. Even the things out there that look like they're absolutely champion don't work.
But if they do, and the odd chance they do work, it's because it's, you know, copy pasta from the last game that they didn't really, you know, invent anything new. It's just, you know, slap another, you know, a high number on it.
It's a huge, huge business. Gaming, whatever the hell that actually means, is a huge business. Even if you cut out, you know, like Zynga bullshit, you know? Even if you just get rid of that and don't consider it that part of what we call gaming, mm-hmm. you know? The world sort of considers it all one big thing. Well, just talk about the stuff that we like. It's still...
Massive.
Dude, it's still billions.
Yeah.
It's still billions. And even though it's as big as it is, it's desperate as hell. Everyone is in dire straits, even the people who are doing really well. Because conglomerates have sucked people into the shit, you know? How bad is Activision doing? You know, so bad that, Vivendi?
That's what I was trying to think of the other company, fucking get rid of them?
I'm shopping around somebody to buy that shit, you know? Activision's not doing great. You know, they're having issues. They're having the same issues that EA's having for slightly different reasons. But Blizzard's Blizzard. Blizzard's rolling in it. They're doing great. They're performing really, really well. And that's one of the weirdnesses of the, you know, how business works now. Like, it's desperate for everyone. I like to think that it's maybe getting a little harder for the big guys and a little easier for the little guys.
Yeah.
And I repeat my belief that it's all about tools. If we can just... Better tools. Always at lower prices. Put them in the hands of people who know what they're doing. Who care what they're doing. The whole thing is really desperate. So really, in the end, what do I care? Somebody's going to put out a $100 weirdo thing. I shouldn't poo it. So much. I really shouldn't.
Yeah, Thundrago says, headlines about major releases always seem to be about big numbers, but still, companies report bad quarter earnings bad quarter earning numbers. Digital Hue says game development is hard and expensive. Yeah, it is. And then you've got to, I mean, you really have to succeed in order to...
What is the threshold for success?
That's what, yeah.
It varies so greatly.
You really have to, for these bigger companies, apparently, you've got to break a ceiling in order to, that line is so fucking high for them to consider you a success.
Mm-hmm.
You yourself, it's one thing for you to consider that, wow, we sold, you know, this many copies or this much worth of product. Whereas the big guys upstairs say, yeah, don't get too happy about it.
Well, and there are plenty of examples of sales numbers not even mattering.
True.
New Vegas is 84 Metacritic,
mm-hmm.
as an example. Anyway, yeah. It's tough business.
Yeah. And they use Kickstarter to get some funding. Dennis sent us a tweet and said, do we have any thoughts on the Penny Arcade Kickstarter?
Man, it took me a couple days to actually get to a place where I could just sort of walk away from the thought. I'm not like super sanguine about PA, you know? I sort of used to be. I liked them when their situation was a little bit different. I don't fucking hate them or anything.
I can't tell you how long it's been since I've read them.
I just have a little bit of a bias towards their empire and how it works and what it does, and it's fine. I don't want to change anybody's mind about it. I just have my own. I have my own personal feelings about how things work. Mostly, it breaks down to when I started paying attention to them. In a world where there really wasn't much of that stuff, a long, long time ago. They and their worldview were like a certain thing. And I thought it was really, really great. And I've seen it evolve over time to become something that I don't agree with really at all. You know, mostly just when it comes down to their critical opinions. And, you know, I think it's the result of people who don't have to buy their own games anymore. I don't want to belabor that point. I've said it enough times, and I think it matters. If you don't have to buy your game...
What do you care?
You're going to have a different opinion. You may love it. I'm not saying you wouldn't, but you're going to have a different opinion. And their whole world seems to me to be one of, like, people who don't buy their games. They do a lot of shit for a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
They really do. They are, like, exquisite producers of things people care about. Whether it's community, convention, games production, criticism,
child help,
it's anything. Yeah. It's all like really, really good. And so I had a hard time not just kind of taking some of my biases about what they are into this idea of them trying to kickstart the banner ad out of the way. Because it just... The more I read about it, the less it seemed like it was actually, like, wrong, I guess. It just seemed so... Shit, man, you want $1 million to take down a banner ad? That's what it is. It's the heart of it. Hey, give us $1 million, we'll take down the banner ad. And, you know, there's maybe a little bit of meta stuff about, like, what kind of battle they have to do with the people who are... manage the ad space, you know, whether that's like a really like $1 million headache they're getting rid of or something like that. And I didn't really know about any of that, and I found arguments kind of go in both ways. In the end, I don't care, you know, I don't care if it's a Kickstarter, then it's all or nothing, you know. Mm-hmm. they don't source $185,000 from the community, which still doesn't get the banner ad taken down. You know, it's either gone or not gone. And they, I mean, obviously they made it, right? Or is it still ongoing?
It's still ongoing, but they did hit their goal. Yeah. Yes. A couple of comments on this from the chat room here. STM Fuller says, good for them if they can do it, but I'm not donating. Digital Hue says, it's almost like they're trying to make a statement about something, but I don't know what. Not that they are, but it's like they're trying to be ironic. Ship Pagan says, nor I, besides their Kickstarter, is actually against Kickstarter rule.
According to the Kickstarter rules, and these are not like massively complicated rules, they're pretty straightforward.
It's not. It's almost like their mission statement.
Yeah.
It's...
You must be making a thing. You must be producing a thing. This money helps you produce a thing. Mm-hmm. A work of art, a piece of music, a game.
Something tangible.
A movie. A thing. Secondly, there are to be no please fund my life or please fund my general I do stuff, please help me fund the fact that I just do things.
Yeah.
You know? Kickstarter seems to be interested in doing very specific things, funding specific projects,
mm-hmm.
so that people have a perfectly clear understanding of what they get.
Yes.
And all of the associated benefits for different tiers aside, because Penny Arcade has offered those, and say what you will about them, they look pretty, look mildly fishy to me, but whatever, I don't care. I'm not saying they're shady, just that, like, I get to buy my own lunch and hang out with you guys. That seems a little bit weird, but whatever, fuck it. I don't see the thing. What I see is you're taking down a banner so that you can put your efforts elsewhere. That's basically how I read what they're doing. And my understanding is that that's absolutely not at all the Kickstarter rules. A lot of people said, Kickstarter okayed it, so it's not against the rules. Well, how about... Fuck you. How about Kickstarter okayed it, so Kickstarter is okay with it? But they wrote their rules down. And in the earlier like weeks and months when we were all beginning to pay very close attention to Kickstarter... There were, like, when kind of not understanding how it went, there were several instances where people were like, hey, I'm an artist and I paint cute shit. Give me money so I can do it.
Yeah.
And Kickstarter was just shutting them down all over the place. No, you're not. This is not what we do. Well, okay. So why is PA coming in and doing that? Like, it just... I don't want to say it's wrong, you know, but the rules read pretty simply to me. And the spirit... is just as clear,
mm-hmm.
you know? And I just, God, it just, I feel all like rubbed the wrong way about it, you know? I don't say it's like wrong or evil. I'm not giving them any money.
I remember when Kickstarter first popped up and it was being talked about on the COG forums, and I was like, hey, we could do a Kickstarter for in-game chat. And everybody was like, well, what would you do? What would we get?
Yeah.
A new episode.
And I was like, you know, and that's when I was like, oh yeah, I guess you need to be making a product, but we're right. already making a product of which we make no money off of. Could use new equipment though. And so that's, but looking at this, then it kind of was like, well, maybe this can be done.
No. It can only be done if you're PA.
Exactly. I think that's
where a lot of people feel that it is. Also, not for nothing, Kickstarter gets, you know...
How much do they get?
They get their little bit.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
It could be a tenth of a percent on $1 million Kickstarter.
Yeah.
I don't even want to be like that, and it's their business, it's their playground, and it's their rules. That's fine. But I was just getting to the point where I was really warming up to the notion of Kickstarter in particular and the crowdsourcing, and I was just kind of, it had broken the ice with me.
Bad taste in your mouth.
And I was a frigid cunt about it 3-4 months ago. I was just easing up on it a little bit. Well, don't act like I didn't have any reason to be. We talked about this once a long time ago, and pardon me for invoking something that's only slightly related. You remember back when, we had more people involved, we had more time, and like we did our annual stuff with
Child's Play.
With Child's Play,
yeah.
And there were a lot of arguments, even from within the community, about, hey, this is an idiotic thing to give money to. What you should really be doing is giving money, like, directly to poor people, or give it to the Red Cross or Red Crescent, or like something like that. This is toys for kids, and they're fine. Like, that's not where money's really most needed. And it's like, no, that's bullshit. because that's not how charitable giving works. It's not a zero-sum game, you know? It's people just give money to what they... They don't say, I need to give money away, let me find the most worthy cause, and then make a mistake about which is the most worthy cause. They see a cause that they are personally attached to, and are therefore willing to give money. Mm-hmm. That's how charitable giving works in most cases. Something similar to that argument seems to be invoked on Kickstarter a lot. Well, there's plenty of money to go around, and people will always give money to what they want. I kind of don't know if that's true. If that's true, then it's perfectly fine what PA is doing. You roll up in here and do your thing and take the banner ad off for all of the reasons, and I will even say that it's good for everyone and everyone wins, whether that's true or not. But I have a suspicion that that's not how it works, and that there's only so much attention people, particularly in the gaming realm, can give to all of these projects, and there's sure as hell a limited amount of money that they can give. There just is. There's a lot of fatigue to it, particularly since you fund and you fund and you fund and you fund here all in the early stages of this thing. And what's come out? Nothing. You've just funded a bunch of shit that's not going to show up for a couple of years. Right? So what happens? How much is Matt Garrett going to give to the thing that pops up next week, next month, early next year? Right? Yeah. Are you going to be funding 8 different things in the span of a month? Probably not, because you've already funded a ton of shit that you haven't gotten anything from.
Yeah. I mean, that's why I didn't fund Jane Jensen's game. You know,
but you were funding the shit out of stuff early on. You funded,
I funded 3 things.
I thought you funded like 5.
Just 3. And one of them I have. I funded last year as a watch band for iPod.
Then you're not the best example of that. Then. So no, I mean, honestly, I apologize. Yeah. But there are a lot of people who were doing that.
They fund stuff, and they
now they're like, oh well, okay. Like now I have to back off because there's just too much stuff.
Mm-hmm.
What happens when someone really big comes in? You know, are they pulling too much money into their orbit? Are they overshadowing too many other things? I don't know. I just felt like it was a really brilliant place for people to go who had no other mechanism of funding. And so when you see somebody show up who really does have many, many viable options for funding and isn't trying to bootstrap something, you know, it just gives me a sour stomach, you know?
Some more comments from the chat room here.
Yeah,
STM Fuller says, that sounds like corporate begging. Digital Hugh says, I could almost see them afterwards going, haha, suckers, see, you gave us $1 million and didn't need to see anything to back up what we said. You turned it over blindly. Now you guys can see it. Meaning whatever point they're trying to make, being ironic. STM Fuller, and again, this is the problem with Kickstarter. It's investing in the product without actually getting anything. But technically, he's responding again to Digital Hughes. Technically, it does, though. It helps them produce their webcomic. Ship Pagan says, it's for starting something, not maintaining something. The PA Kickstarter is about maintaining and not starting. Kickstarter stands to make a ton of money off of this. And STM Fuller agrees, yeah, it's different because it's PA, because there's a brand name there. Thundrago says it sounds suspiciously like PA is trying to find a way to get money for what they're doing already. Shit Pagan, that's exactly what they're doing. GT Chris says, not to say that I agree with the PA Kickstarter, but I gather that the different tiers mean that they'll be producing various works that would not otherwise have been produced, like a Lookouts comic. Maybe that allows them to get past the Kickstarter rules, if barely. Ship Pagan says Lookout's already a thing.
Which puts the whole discussion back in a position of maintain versus...
Right.
Right. I just, again... STM Fuller
says it's corporate charity, bottom line, is what he thinks it is. And that's pretty near the head there.
Yeah.
And doesn't that just... Shouldn't that gall everybody a little bit? Like, wouldn't it be nice to have somewhere, like, a little, like, nurturing fucking cabbage patch for little guys? And I mean proper little guys.
Yeah, proper. Yeah.
Like, where they can bootstrap in comfort and well, not necessarily comfort, but, like, it's got to be a place, man. It's got to be a place where those guys can get what they need and the focus can be on those guys without fucking behemoths of any sort moving in. And I'm probably wrong about a lot of what I'm saying. I just feel that there's not quite something right about it. And you know what? You've had success, and you did it. It was very hard. I was a big fucking fan when they went down to, during those days when it was like, hey guys, maybe there's no comic next week. Because we both have shitty jobs and no money, and we made some poor business decisions. And I remember watching them go through their hardship. These guys were not handed anything.
Yeah.
They were not. They did get lucky, but they are very talented, very passionate, and they are undisputably good for us all. But just go ahead and take your success and operate. You're in a different bracket now, man.
Yeah,
it's like being in a different tax bracket. Just go be up there. And fuck it. I don't know. I'm willing to be wrong. I'm wrong a lot. But it doesn't matter. It's going through and it's going to do its thing. If his prediction, though, that this is a sucker punch comes true, that would be brilliant. That really, really would be brilliant. But they haven't really said a whole lot of bad stuff about Kickstarter anyway. So I don't really think they would get in business with Kickstarter just to kick Kickstarter in the teeth.
STM Fuller says, so another thought, would it make a difference if it weren't through Kickstarter? If there was... Well, Shitbagan says, I'd be all for it if there was just a donate section on their website.
And I believed in that for a minute. And somebody did make a point that Kickstarter makes it all or nothing. If it's a donate banner on their site,
then
you donate.
Could, yeah,
then they let's say that let's say they need $500,000 to turn off one banner, which is what they said. $1 million to turn off both. And they get $280,000, which isn't enough to even turn off the one banner. They still kind of have to do something to make up that gap between what was donated and what they have in ad revenue. So, or what they need, you know, to supply through ad revenue. That kind of puts it in a weird, like, well, you just gave us a bunch of money, like, what's up? Now, the other side of that is, people want to give Penny Arcade money so that Penny Arcade can keep
doing
what they want. Would probably do that. And the only, the suggestion that we'll do this, this, and this specific shit at these tiers of money, I'm pretty sure is an entirely Kickstarter thing. So, yeah, I don't know. I don't know. It's just weird.
It's
messy,
yeah,
and kind of filthy, and I just think they shouldn't necessarily have done it. Maybe they got something in mind. Maybe.
Well, on to something else that might be getting messy. Spigot writes in and says, do we have any thoughts on the Fez patch shenanigans that are going on Xbox Live Arcade? Is there a clear bad guy in this?
What's going on?
The game Fez,
yeah,
that's on Xbox Live Arcade exclusively for the moment, had a horrible bug that, from what the developers say, is only affecting about 1% of the people who own it. It's a horrible save game bug where it just corrupts their save files. And they can't continue to play, and they can't, you know, continue to... They can't finish their game from what they did. The developers have said that we will put our patch through, but it does not address... It's not going to fix this game save thing because Microsoft wants to charge us for certification.
Shit, okay, I did hear a little bit about this. Please keep talking, but I was really worried that... I somehow missed this entire story.
No, and I could be getting some facts wrong, and the chat room will definitely let me know if I'm getting these wrong. As I understand it, they signed an exclusivity deal with Xbox Live Arcade to get their game out. The game's been in production for a long time. When you do that, you get free certification. A one-time free certification.
Are you fucking kidding me?
Yeah. Afterwards, you have to pay. And you have to pay to, when you send the patch through, it has to go through certification. You have to pay for that before it makes it out.
One time, it just seems ridiculous.
Yeah.
Like,
it's Microsoft. Yeah.
Whatever. I'm sorry. That was a preemptive.
I know. But so they've done this, and apparently they can't. I don't know that they can afford it, but they say it's just the price for that is just way too high. We're not going to pay it, and so we're sorry. You're left with a bugged game. And told people in through Twitter, through other means, however, saying that, look, our exclusivity deal runs out soon. And that's all they would say on that topic. So you can bet you'll see it on Steam, I'm sure.
That doesn't help out the people that own it already that, you know.
Well, let me ask you something right here.
Now, Microsoft has fired back and said and responded and said that we're not trying to extort these people or anything like that. This is our rule.
Well, this is what I was going to say. Did you not?
Yeah, they knew this up front.
Yeah. Now. Yeah, you're right. Dirty is absolutely what this is.
Yeah.
Okay. A. Microsoft, their whole management of relationship with
developers
through the arcade, we've known for years now, is just, it's a fucking Greek tragedy. Like, it's bad. Yeah. It's very bad. They are complete shit heels. They're going to get hoisted by their own petard at some point because of this entire thing. The old digital distribution corner of the market is moving at fucking flank speed away from these assholes. Whether it's crowdfunding, discount distribution, free-to-play models, freemium models, any of that stuff. That stuff is fast approaching a world where it all makes a hell of a lot of sense. A year ago, almost none of this stuff made solid good sense, with the exception of Steam. Steam had already proved that discount distribution, and DRM as a service kind of thing actually can work if done properly. But all this other stuff, every other way that we're looking to a new type of thing is working. Microsoft shit is bad, really bad. And we knew that already. And so they're shit heels. However, I can't believe for a second that these developers didn't actually know what they were in for when they did this. That the deal was a deal.
Yeah.
This shit to me sounds a little subprime mortgage. Like, oh, Microsoft's assholes because they're fucking you guys over. Like, really? Because you didn't read the paperwork?
Yeah.
You're telling me that it's an entirely, really vicious scenario? A predatory scenario or something like that? I don't believe that. Like, unless they changed the terms. And if you want to tell me that they changed the terms, I'll even be willing to listen. But if you're just telling me, hey, this deal sucks, this deal that we made and we're completely aware of sucks, and we don't feel like paying the money, so you guys are screwed, it's totally Microsoft's fault, because it's expensive. That sounds really bad to me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I can't, there's no way I can go over everything. The chat room just exploded.
Oh. Well, try, because I don't know enough about this story.
Well, so I'm trying to. First off, Ustream's chat room is very weird. It wants to. Anytime somebody updates into the chat room, it always wants to, for whatever reason, throw my scroll back up a few lines for some stupid reason. So this is going to be hard to do. I'm going to go with Digital Hughes here because he said that. He said he had. That's not quite how it works. I can speak to that. It's not so much about exclusivity. And parts of these I can't tell where he's replying to things we said or replying to things that people said in the chat room.
The exclusivity part I don't know anything about.
It becomes the reality of title updates. First patches, title updates are free. Microsoft is dead set on making an emphasis from day one, it is your responsibility to make sure your game works and is functional. Cert test against system requirements and security of the Xbox Live platform. It is not an extensive QA process.
Right.
It's completely 100% relies on the developer. Microsoft flat out says that. And it applies to everyone, not just exclusive games.
Which also kind of tracks with what we've been told.
Right. So, Microsoft gives developers a freebie, one free title update.
Okay. Which sounds a little bit less guffaw worthy, I suppose. Although, I don't know. For the good of everybody, shouldn't we all just be working together to make sure that... And maybe he can say something about this as well. I know that Dale, let's say, what's the fucking deal? What does it cost you? If you're putting all of the work, the real QA work, on the developer, what does it cost you to push a title update? What is it? Is there anything in that cost that isn't bullshit? I'd be willing to be told that that's the case. There's often things that we don't think about in situations like this, but it makes no sense to me. Mm-hmm. It really doesn't make any sense to me.
STM Fuller asks, what's the point of the cert process then? Digital Hue says, because bugs do happen. Anything beyond that does carry a cost. It's not only to cover their cost, but also an incentive the developer publisher does their job. Saying, hey, there's a charge here, so you might want to make sure your shit is good before we put it out there.
Well, judging just by the behavior of that, like, it certainly hasn't been... I can't tell how many people would have fucked around if it hadn't have been there. I just know that plenty of broken shit's made it through.
How many day one patches have we had to deal with?
Yeah, how many hours have you played at Castle Crashers? I bought that shit so that I could play multiplayer with my friends. And it didn't work.
Yeah, it had problems, yeah. I remember that.
Shit didn't work for shit over the network. It's the only reason I bought it, so I never played it. They eventually fixed it, but...
But by that time, there's
other things. It was a good ways down the line,
too. It was a very good ways down the line, so... I mean, and I do know it's complicated. I just trying to keep the argument simple, though. I suppose there's enough blame to go around, but if we're talking about charging for title updates, if we're talking about something shows up that didn't get caught in Q&A, if you're telling me that it affects 1% of users, whatever. That sounds like a good enough number, I suppose, that you couldn't have... That you couldn't necessarily have caught it during your own QA process, I guess. But for God's sake, man, isn't so really what we're just saying here is that contractually, it's your responsibility to pay for and provide these fixes, and you don't want to do it.
Yeah,
you're unwilling to do it. That's all.
Can't regardless of what you didn't know that going into it.
Regardless of the specifics of the deal, you're unwilling to pay to make your game work for your people.
Mm-hmm.
People are pissed off.
And a couple of the... I know some of the forum... not contradictions, but some of the forum... points that have been made, legitimately or not, is that this game... This particular game itself has been in development since about 2010. Or 7. I think in development in 2007.
That makes a difference.
Yeah. No. That does make a difference. In development between since 2007 was... announced that, hey, we're going to be, you know, we got something here around 2010.
Okay.
And then moving forward with that or going to be released or something like that. Point being is that this thing's been going on forever. They obviously didn't do their job and missed this bug.
Maybe.
That's a thing or had enough time to really figure this thing out. Going back to the forum comments here, Digital Hue says it is a cost to scheduling, headcount, and manpower. Otherwise... People would patch up the yin-yang all the time, and Microsoft must test all of them. Can you imagine... Yeah. Can you imagine if 100 games wanted to do patches? Xbox Live is a closed platform. And Sony is, too, and they charge as well.
I mean, they're charging. I understand wanting to avoid their charges for every single time that you patch.
Mm-hmm.
I have a big question about why the hell they have to charge every time. But... If we're reiterating that they have to cert every patch, well, I don't know. I guess the real evil then is that the entire system is fucked.
Essentially,
isn't that what it seems like?
I was going to say that seems to be that seems to be the case for it. Everything that touches, this is again from the chat room here, everything that touches Xbox Live must be certed and signed by Microsoft. Ship Pagan is
cumbersome.
Yeah.
Absolutely cumbersome.
Ship Pagan brings up the point, then what is your gold subscription paying for? What are the ads paying for that don't go away when you have gold?
That's a sore spot that I... Yeah. That's another thing that's completely out of time.
Yeah.
The gold subscription. That doesn't make any sense, or at least doesn't make any sense in the future we're moving into.
Mm-hmm.
What a goddamn mess. Seriously, what a goddamn mess the Xbox Live is.
Well, here's Spigot's question on this. He wanted our thoughts, but his question was, is there a clear bad guy in this situation?
Yeah, I don't think so.
I don't think there is either.
All the above.
Look. Let's just keep it very simple, okay? You've got a producer, a distributor, and customers. Customers, I think it's bad form for the producer, for the person who's responsible for the quality of whatever it is you're buying, to run, if they have it in them to make it better. And it sounds like these guys do, they just don't, that the relationship is kind of messed up. Because unless something has changed in our reading of this, they're still just... Their refusal to do it was because of cost. It's their game, you know? I know it's tough and I know it's expensive, but... We're not talking about potential customers here. We're talking about guys who already bought your thing. You know, we're talking about... Talking about your good name. Your product's good name. And if you think that this kind of reputation doesn't follow you everywhere, then you're not paying attention. Because it absolutely does. So, I think that everybody would be best served if they just did whatever they had to do to make it work. Even if that means doing a bunch of stuff that's not right. Ultimately, the customer doesn't want to hear from the producer that the distributor is the real evil. He doesn't. He just wants his stuff, and he wants his stuff, and he wants it to work. So, even if the distributor is evil, even if he did fuck everybody over, even if it's the fucking mob, doesn't necessarily matter. It's your name on it. Make it right. You just do it. Make it right. Pay the money. Make it right. Chances are they'll pay dividends down the line.
Yeah.
Well, I know that we've talked to a few. Well, the only ones I can think of is the, and now I can't think of their name anymore. But they did that little ninja game on Xbox Live Arcade. Can't remember their name. But I know they didn't have too nice of things to say about working with Xbox Live.
I remember that was at the point when we really started hearing a lot of bad things about how people were treated. A tough situation. It's never that simple. Like, you know, unless it's... I don't know. It's never all one guy or it's not that simple.
Yeah.
It would be better if it was, but it's not.
Okay, that is all the tweets that we've got, so we can move on to our emails that we've received. Daniel, whoops, nope, not that one. Let's see. As Potato writes in and says, "Hey IGC, how's it going? Here I come running again. I'm tired of Kickstarter. Maybe I'll sound like a hater, but come on, people that did one amazing thing once, maybe just due to luck, and all they've done afterwards was shit, don't deserve my money, or anyone's money for that matter. Want to do something great? Go indie, go small developer. There are hundreds of small teams doing amazing half-price games out there. Not everything needs to be a full-price game. Anyway, over to the Eve side of things. Back in EVE, I moved from the E-Uni, spent a year there, and joined a Null Sector alliance that holds some space. So now wars are for real. Now I have to fight for my home, and if I lose it, I risk losing all that I've gathered in the past year. 30 days after I joined, a full universe war blew up. EVE now is facing one of the biggest wars it has ever had. Basically, the galaxy is split in two blocks, and we spend our playtimes trying to punch each other in the face. Already, I've been in massive battles involving 1 to 2,000 players. 1,000 to 2,000 players. All of this was of no consequence if it wasn't an EVE conflict. Wars for territory in EVE are almost the same as wars for territory in the real world. Besides the actual fleet engagements, we use every dirty trick in the book. Cripple enemy supply lines, steal enemies' equipment, demoralize the pilots of the enemies, break their leadership. It goes on and on. Our main objective during a war is to make enemy life so miserable that they just quit playing so we can claim their undefended territory, which makes me think why a developer will ever do a pay-to-play game where one of the main objectives is to make other players stop playing. It's crazy. Finally, other MMOs, and more specifically, Rift. I played when it came out, like I did with almost every other MMO. It was fun, cool graphics, too much like WoW, free month ends, I quit. I'm playing this now whenever I need a break from EVE complexity, and I must say this product is a few steps over any other hotkey fantasy MMO out there. It has a strong in-game, it's very flexible since every class can play three or the four main roles, tank, DPS, healer, and support. It has one of the funniest gameplay modes I ever saw. They call it Instant Adventure. I like to call it the Attack of the Vandals. Basically, it's a random quest mode that happens in a solo quest zones, but it's played in raids, so you have 40 people doing the same quest. Visually, it's 40 people running, trampling, and murdering everything in sight, but it's more fun than it deserves to be. Finally, the guys at Tryon offer services that should be standard for free for every MMO. Server transfers are free for every server, limited only for once a week per tune. They are quick to patch bugs, and from what I heard, their customer service is better than usual. It may sound like I work for them, but I really don't. I just thought these guys deserve attention and more players. So if you're planning to try an old hotkey, give it a shot. As always, keep up the good work.
Not like I don't ever say this, but I did the same thing. I was all about it, bought it, played it for the month, then I was done.
Mm-hmm.
But I keep my ear turned in their direction a little bit, and they get just enough press, just enough to make people aware of what they're doing. But it's a little over a year old. I think it was sometime in the spring of last year was when that came out. And is that right?
What, Rift?
Yeah.
Remember.
I believe they have spent that time, the time between their initial launch troubles, because, hey, those guys had massive server queues. I mean, supernatural server queues. I had to spend 6 hours in queue sometimes, which is just absurd. But they've actually really done a lot of good work in the year since they came out. They've done an astonishing amount of work trying to make up for, you know, not being a ridiculous success right out of the gate.
March of 11.
Yeah, okay. That's what I thought.
Yeah.
Which makes it actually not very old. And I've really, really wanted to check out the instant action stuff and a lot of the other additions that they've made. And I know they've done an awful lot of quality of life shit. I didn't make it very far, but I thought they had a really, really great world, a really good, I'm 105% explorer
mm-hmm.
on the chart, which is anything that lets me do that, lets me explore and move around a fairly well-realized world is something that's going to keep me interested in. I thought several times about going back because I own it, so just like anything else, it would just be the 15 to re-up.
STM yeah. Fuller has a question, a queue for 6 hours, why would you queue for that long?
When we started playing, I had a group of people I was playing with. Daniel
mm-hmm.
Had like a group of people, so like I knew some people. They joined in with his people. There was just a bunch of people who had got pre-release placement on a specific realm. So you had your guild, you were already a thing, kind of like whatever. And then you already like decided to go the way. It wasn't quite as much as like Old Republic did, which is like where you were like the whole system was automatic. But it was close enough to it where basically this giant group of like 50 or 60 or 70 people as a guild had already decided to be a specific place on a specific faction. And if you wanted to play with them, and this was before they made any of the current rules about server transfers or anything like that, this was at launch. So if you wanted to get online and do any amount of playing with some people, you had to queue for your realm.
Hmm.
That's it. Yeah. Otherwise, you could go play another character on another thing, but the whole point was to be playing with the people you had committed to as a group. And they didn't do a very good job of handling that. And there were days and days and days and days where I would come home from work at prime time, hit the queue, and it would be, you know, 3+ hours mm-hmm. with six, and I'm told even more, hitting people at a certain time. And it didn't have anything to do with how many people could be in this on the server at once. It had everything to do with the fact that at launch, on day one, everybody is in the 1-10 zone. Everybody is. The 4,000 people who populate the server are not spread out everywhere. They're all in this one little zone. So you have to just let in a few people at a time so that they can then move on and level up and move to the next zone.
Yeah.
That's really what caused the problem. But it chapped my ass pretty hard in that first week and sort of turned me off to it. And I actually did wind up going to another server and just rolling a different thing. Mm-hmm.
Next email comes from Craig, who says, hey, love the show. I stopped listening in fall of 2010 and just started back up again. Had a few emails towards you guys on stuff like Splinter Cell Conviction and Modern Warfare 2 quite a while ago, and I hope to get back in stride. I'm somewhat disappointed that the discussion on Star Wars 1313 and the potential for a mature Star Wars game came to a head as it did. Maturity is not simply gore, sex, and drugs. Smoking some illegal Coruscant hookah, watching a stormtrooper try to collect his own innards, or seeing some softcore Twilight pornography would classify your game as mature, yes. My issue comes from the fact that this is not the only way something can be considered mature. One of my all-time favorite games, and my favorite Star Wars game, is Knights of the Old Republic 2, The Sith Lords, created by the skilled team at Obsidian. KOTOR 2 is one of the most mature games I've ever played. It dealt with questions of ethics, morality, moral absolutes, selfishness, self-sacrifice, redemption, and war, just to name a few concepts. In KOTOR 2, you dealt with, number one, the idea of moral absolutes and the potential fallacy of the light side, dark side conflict of the Jedi and the Sith. Your teacher throughout the game, Kriya, I believe, had experienced both sides of this conflict and argued that moral extremes that ignored rational or intuitive behavior in favor of blind faith in certain tenets was potentially devastating to a civilization or universe as a whole. All of your followers in the game could change their light-dark side alignment purely through philosophical discussion. Number two, you dealt with the idea of war, preemptive militaristic assaults, and non-interventionalist policy. In the KOTOR mythos, Boba Fett's 4,000-year past predecessors, the Mandalorians, had staged an assault on various worlds. The Jedi didn't want to get involved right away, so KOTOR's Darth Revan, pre-Sith version, took a bunch of Jedi to stop the Mandalorians. Your character in KOTOR 2 was one of these Jedi, and much of the game had you dealing with your part in disobeying command, betraying your order to instead help innocents, helping a rogue who eventually became a Sith Lord who annihilated the Jedi Order, and the general shittiness of war. Heck, you even had some swell fun in both KOTORs with a Mandalorian character who helped both emphasize and empathize within you the idea that Mandalorians are a torn and fragmented culture that sometimes has problems reconciling its roots to the world's contemporary politics similar to Viking culture. For the sake of time, these are just two basic examples among dozens that could be explored in detail. Star Wars has been explored in a mature setting, and it can be again. Karen Travis wrote a ton of books about the Clone Wars, and it had a bunch of clone troopers having pretty big existential crisis. I refuse to ignore the potential that a now recently orphaned and totally clone baby Boba Fett, or RT-1313, can't have himself a dark, windy, and utterly mature tale through the bowels of Coruscant. While the possibility of this happening isn't incredibly strong, it's still there. Much with the Lara Croft hubbub, I have faith that maybe one day serious issues can be explored in games with a maturity that has yet to be truly defined by the ESRB. Maybe one day you'll see this game is rated M for social insight, complex moral themes, and well-developed characters on the back of video game boxes. Regards, Craig.
I agree with that idea. I really do. When we were talking, I mean, I agree with that 100%. The only thing that's worth pointing out is that That's not what the ESRB does now.
Mm-hmm.
And these guys have specifically said, if they had just said we're trying to make a mature game, I wouldn't have made any shit about it. I wouldn't have pressed Matt on the issue. I wouldn't have wondered how it's even possible. But that is not what they said. They specifically said they wanted an M-rated game.
Mm-hmm.
That was what the press was about. The press was not about solely about I want to tell a mature story. I think there's plenty of philosophical maturity, interpersonal maturity. As long as you don't even get out of hand with it, I think there's plenty of opportunities for sexual maturity, you know, like an adult relationship type shit. There's plenty of that. It's a great background for that. Science fiction in general is one of the greatest backdrops, you know, against which to project all sorts of social issues. It's better than just, you know, normal contemporary stuff. Lets you tweak knobs and flip switches in ways that you can't necessarily do with current stuff. But my objection, my sole objection was that they wanted specifically an M rating. And we know that M rating has very specific meanings.
Mm-hmm.
You can tell an extremely mature story with a T. You know? Easily. That's all they've ever done. And that was my contention about Star Wars, is that Star Wars had never drifted out of the PG-13 zone in terms of its films. It had never drifted out of the whatever the young adult rating is for any of the cartoon stuff they've done. And it's never drifted out of teen before in video gaming. M-rated video game is unprecedented for Star Wars. And that was... But see, that was... What you're saying was actually kind of my point. Star Wars has already done everything Star Wars has ever needed to do without an M rating. So, like, this sort of, you know, booyah, fist-pumping declaration of we want an M rating seemed kind of...
out of its realm?
Yeah. It seemed a little grotesque, actually, because to my mind, I agree with everything he said in that email. You can already tell any necessary Star Wars story with all of the sheen and the magic and majesty and brilliance that Star Wars is capable of. We've already done it. I've told some shitty stories, too, but
Yeah. Good
games with great stories that are meaningful and adult and you know, all of those things, it's already possible. So why go out of your way to say you want an M rating? What are you going to have to do to achieve that M rating, and why does that matter to you? Telling an adult story, just as he suggested, it would be nice if mature meant this shit's going to make you sort of question the way you lead your life. But that's not what it meant. It means violence.
In Twilight movies.
Some kind of gore or blood or something, or a lot of bad language. Bad language is right out because it's Star Wars. They don't use the same words that we use.
No. KOTOR and KOTOR 2 were rated what, teen?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. I think after this last time, because I kept asking, like, correct me if I'm wrong. I don't think they've ever had an M-rated property. I'm pretty sure the KOTOR was just teen.
Yeah. Well, I was... Because
even Old Republic, when you can, you know, fucking sexy time half the people on your spaceship is just teen.
Yeah. And I'm going to bring this up and keep in mind that while you were talking, I was reading as the chat room was going down on this...
As the chat room scrolls.
As the chat room was scrolling, I was reading these. So this may have already been brought up, but Chris uses the example that KOTOR told a very mature tale, but they still used a teen rating to do that, which falls into your point. You don't need an M on the box to tell your story if that's what you want to get across.
Right. I guess my whole question was, what's up with you guys that you want an M on the box?
Why do you want an M on the box? Exactly.
Teen.
Yeah.
Why is it that you want the M on the box? Is it so that you can... I don't know. Because when you want to shoot somebody, you want blood to come out? Instead of just smoking and falling over? I don't know.
I was just really last time surprised that they wanted mature in terms of the rating. It just, it still boggles my mind. What the hell are you going to do? You know, maybe if the whole, certain works actually don't ever get really rated, books and stuff in particular. Like, if you wanted to do some of the graphic novels or some of the expanded universe books in video game form or in cartoon form and, like, do them the way they were written.
I think they had one, it was like recently with Stormtroopers and the Death. Like
no, that's exactly what I was like the undead Stormtrooper zombie weird. Like if you were gonna take something like that and move it in, I get you. I was just a little baffled that any rated Star Wars material had never gone and doing it for years. Yes, yeah. It's unnecessary. Other places, I consider it thoroughly necessary. Wouldn't want to play a teen rated Max Payne game.
Or a
Grand Theft Auto. Like, I'm not interested.
Yeah. We'll say for his
I game. Go there to feel dirty and terrible.
Yeah.
It's very odd to me. I'm super. I don't know. Will it even turn out to have an M rating?
Who knows? He did get Boba Fett's sign wrong. It's not RT 1313. It's CT 1313.
Can you tell me why that matters? What it even means.
Annoying. CT for Clone Trooper. That's his, his TKID.
Bullshit. Bullshit. It's all crap. It's all lies. Although I can't even do that. I can't do that. If you're like a real purist, Boba Fett's an idiot. You know?
Jaster Muriel. Still somewhere.
Well, I mean, but that's not even. Yeah, no, if you're like, if you purely just go off, don't you remember?
Yeah.
God, some magazine that was like, there was this like little one page thing of like Boba Fett, and like around the outside of the page, it had all of his.
Oh, lines. Yeah, it's just a little bit.
Like three lines, and then like two thirds of it was just
when he falling into the Sarlacc.
Right. Pit. You have to appeal to some part of the expanded universe if you like Boba. If you're going to tattoo Boba Fett on your leg.
Yeah,
like you have to appeal to something
to convince yourself that the movie is actually
that. No. Yeah, okay. He fell into a worm and died. No. He's not an idiot. See, because he like punched his way out of the worm, right? After having like a philosophical battle with its thousands of years of genetic memory, and then he punched his way out. That's the Boba Fett I tattooed on my leg. Not the one from the movies. Not the one that got knocked into a worm by the blind guy.
Our last email of this episode comes from Blake Mecklenburg, who always sends the art over, or sends the art that he's working on. Hey, in-game chat, recently finished Dead Space 2 and found it thoroughly enjoyable. I did find, however, that as the game pressed on, that I was experiencing more of the same. Dead Space 3 doesn't look to change things in any drastic way, at least not in terms of how combat works and the creatures you'll be facing. This made me think, what would I do to change the way the game feels? I personally think that a major change in venue could help. I might be the only one who thinks this, but I think that if the game took place in some kind of zoo or wildlife preserve-like environment, would allow for the introduction of some new enemy designs that, if handled right, could be incredibly terrifying. Necromorph tigers or rhinos, anyone. Not to mention that a mangled zoo sounds like it could be a particularly creepy place to explore. So my question to you is, what environment types do you think would make for a good Dead Space setting, or what other changes would you make to the game that you think would spice things up? Thanks for the show. It gives me something fun to listen to while I work on my art.
Sorts of environment. Well, it's got to be in the right time.
Mm-hmm.
Any abandoned orphanage.
They kind of
gets me creepy every time.
Yeah,
they briefly did that in 2.
you really do hope it's abandoned.
What
they briefly did that in 2 when you're going through the
2 was I actually thought 2 kind of did a really good job of putting. I didn't like the environment itself. I thought they could have put some more detail into it, but. Being on where were you? Son of a bitch. Where specifically Mars. Were you? Were you on Mars?
I think you're in the orbital
Okay, that's my question.
Yeah, the orbital platform over Mars.
Or station or whatever. Yeah. Yeah, you're right, it was. I personally did think that Dead Space 2 did a pretty good job of that. They had had some great sequences in it.
When you're rocketing back
down. Yeah, doing like the rocketing down through the zero gravity stuff was better because it wasn't just surface to surface. Although, I guess that's not a different environment, so I shouldn't say that. But like going through all of the traveling through all of the residential areas, the apartments and stuff like that was a little bit okay, although it seemed like it was aping someone else's attempt at it previously, which is a lot of what Dead Space sort of felt like in its horror. But
see, I love the environment in the first one, the derelict spaceship. You know, you're
it was great, but that's what I'm saying. They didn't just return to that. And when you did and stuff it was actually
creepier.
It was kind of creepier, wasn't it?
It was.
I really liked. I don't love it the way I love other things, but actually,
it was enjoyable.
I did enjoy it. Now, having felt like through the course of the game, you've seen a bit too much of the same stuff, that's entirely true.
I'm just trying to think of like what they could do to change the environment out from going from the ship to the space platform.
Mining, desolate planet, that stuff is absolutely out. Hey, man, run the other way with it. Put me in a
city?
Put me in some kind of, either in a city. That's not a terrible thought. Harder to do when you just consider how the game is made.
Mm-hmm.
But imagine Dead Space, but 28 days later.
Put you on. Hospital?
Huh? Well, I mean, just like city infection, or even Walking Dead, or something like traditional zombie stuff. Because they've taken like zombie type things,
right?
And they've done the creepy spaceship. Now put me in like a city that's just filled with the damn things.
Yeah,
really good. Or an abandoned zoo.
No, an abandoned zoo would be great. Because I don't want steal that suggestion. Which you could have an abandoned zoo in a city.
Yeah. Zombie monkeys. That'd be fun, wouldn't
it? Man, you want to talk about something that I was born to kill.
Necromorphed monkeys.
Fucking hate monkeys. Maybe something... thinking. There's some underwater.
Zombie Sea Quest?
No. I mean Dead Space Shock. Like, Bioshock.
Yeah.
Dead Space. I don't know. I'm just trying to think of, like, every place we put things.
The desert?
Yeah, right?
You see them from miles.
Let's see. Digital Hue says, old abandoned hospitals are always good. There was a giant part of Dead Space 2 in the caves that I just couldn't wait to get out of. I think Dead Space.
What the hell was that?
I think Dead Space 1 had better environments. It almost made me think.
I remember caves.
I remember with
the mining processor.
Why don't I remember the fucking cave?
I'm pretty sure that was that game.
I remember. I really specifically remember, like the hospital you had to break out of. The damn churchy place.
And the little babies with the...
The whole churchy place. Yeah. That was actually kind of like... Why the hell is there like a big churchy place on this space station? This makes no sense. It's just scary. The daycare. Yeah, there was a daycare.
Wow. The nursery, yeah.
It's still a good game. You should really play them. They were pretty cool. And a bit this side of like really scary.
Yeah.
So, you know...
Unsettling.
At worst, they were unsettling, and they had some jump scenes. That's about it. We're not talking about the cradle from Thief 3. We're not talking about that part of System Shock between...
The beginning and the end.
The beginning and the end. we're not talking about Amnesia.
The zombie dog jump in Resident Evil.
That's classic, man. Something like that couldn't really scare me now, but...
No, but at that time...
I'm not the same person I was back in 96. The zoo probably still kind of wins.
Well, probably only for the fact that I don't think that we've ever been placed in that before. Another good one, but I think it was done in Left 4 Dead 2, are abandoned carnivals. Abandoned amusement parks. You ever seen those pictures of Six Flags in New Orleans that got hit with the Hurricane Katrina? It's abandoned.
There's a Six Flags in New Orleans? I know that.
They got wiped out through Katrina, I say New Orleans. It could have been somewhere like here. I want to say it was Six Flags.
Hell, whatever it was, it's creepy.
Anyway, it's creepy Pripyat, because they got pictures. Right?
Pripyat.
Oh yeah.
Well, no, I was going to go. There's pictures of. I don't think it was Disney that was behind it, but somebody in some company in Tokyo was going to make something akin to a Disneyland. And they've got some buildings up. Otherwise, it's all overgrown and just...
I've seen that.
But it gives a really creepy vibe.
Yeah.
Because it's all run down. It's all very old. And it's just... abandoned places can be very, very creepy, regardless of what they ever were or meant to be.
Yeah.
There's nothing very jovial about some place that has been left to...
Yeah. When die. You leave something, you demolish it. You just don't abandon it, because then it's just... Yeah.
Abandoned places are like zombies.
Yeah.
That's why they feel... I think it's why they feel so weird. All of... everything about them that was human is gone. And there's only the... Mm-hmm. There's only the shell. And then just... You know.
And that's just decaying.
But abandoned, like, abandoned mental institutions, I think, are overdone and just pushing the point. But if you can find the...
Not abandoned mental institutions are pretty fucking creepy, too.
Well, there's that as well.
Well-staffed, clean... mental institutions are pretty scary.
But still full of crazies is still going to get you.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that's all the emails. Is there anything else?
There most certainly had to have been other things. Went ahead and bought my Guild Wars.
Oh, okay, yeah.
We didn't play first one, you know, but this is not anything like the first one.
Yeah.
It's really weird. They're doing a beta weekend this weekend, which you get access to if you've pre-ordered.
And speaking of, they've started letting Planetside people in.
Yeah, we should talk about that in a second. It's very... Guild Wars 2 is very strange. I know we have listeners that are just like me, so it's fine. I do the same thing. A significant MMO comes out, I'm there.
You gotta be
there. I'm there day one. I will probably not be around after the first month. That's just...
But you gotta put in your first month.
But I will always do the first month. I don't know why. It's a thing I love to do. I can't help it. I've been a little bit better this year because I didn't buy into... Terra. I didn't do Terra. And I kind of wanted to, because I had fun in the beta. It runs great. But it's a little bit too Asian for me.
Remember when that wasn't an issue?
When everything was anyway. But as an MMO, it works. It's just a little bit different. And I didn't buy it, and that's... Whatever, I kind of wanted to check it out, but I had other stuff to do. This, I don't want to say it seems Asian exactly, but its sensibilities really are sort of not the same as other Western MMOs. And it's very fascinating. It's really, really fun to play, but it's... I can't... When I sit down in front of, like proper modern, like... purely Western style, traditional click fest, hotkey combat MMO. I feel like I know what to do always, like automatically. Mm-hmm. My fingers can just run to all the hotkeys that are probably the same between everything, and I just feel at home with it. Can't do that in this game. I feel like I'm a little bit at odds with it, and they've done some things that are so unbelievably good. They have... It may be a little bit story light, and I, for one, never particularly hated wall of text explanations for quests. I didn't mind. Mm-hmm. I don't mind reading. But they're, the way that they've done evolution of quests, I mean, you've played enough MMOs to understand it, right? You walk up to a guy, a guy's got a quest he wants you to do. You go to a place, you kill the things, you turn in the quest, and you get the next quest to go to the other place and carry the power converters to the guy who then wants you to kill some more things.
Right.
It's not how this game works at all. There are no... Nobody gives you anything. You just walk over to a place and some stuff is happening. And if you participate in the stuff, then you get experience, you get you know, like the points you can use to buy gear and supplies, and you get a little bit of money. And it's the effective reward system is the same as quests, but your contribution to things sort of determines the reward you get out of it. So you walk over here and like this guy's got a farm. And there's a bunch of shit wrong at his farm. There's giant worms popping up in the middle of his farm. There's bandits who come down from the hills every now and then and try to, like, burn all his hay bales. His cows are hungry. And, like, you need to fetch some water and, like, all this other stuff. So, like, a thing will pop up when you come near it. And it's like, hey, help this guy. And it's like, you can help him by doing these five things. And you can do... You can kill bandits for 15 minutes... And that'll, you know, eventually, like, your contribution will take you all the way up and you'll get done and stuff. Or you can, like, kill some bandits, like, put out some fires on the hay bales, kill some worms, you know, collect apples or whatever. Like, you can do this stuff. And then every so often, like, a random little special event will happen in that area that's related to it as well. Mm. It's very... It's... I mean, it is absolutely the definition of, like, kind of dynamic involvement. And when once you've done everything they need done, then they will sell you special cool shit. Because you're now like, you've done their stuff. But the random events will still occur at their spot. And in the larger area. And they're like multi phased public events that kind of lead from area to area to area. That have several different requirements. Tiered one after another, and they scale automatically for the most part to how many people are in the zone. And if you're in the neighborhood of one, if you're just in like the corner of a map where one is generally close, it'll alert you and you can hit your map and see where it is. So you may find yourself alone in the middle of a big fight against a crazy thing, but basically, if you can stay alive long enough, a bunch of other stuff, like people will kind of come in and start helping you out.
It's
really just an evolution of the public quest system that we've seen so much of in other games, but, and I certainly haven't played the game all the way through, but fuck me if it's not. It's brilliant. It's brilliant. You can group or solo kind of however much you sort of want to. You can shift back and forth between, you know, damaging roles and support roles without any real effort. There are no tank classes. There are no healing classes. Everybody can kind of, to one degree or another, do everything. If you die and you're laying on the ground and you're dead, anybody can just want to run over and start resurrecting you. And the more people who come over and hit the button to resurrect you, the faster you'll get resurrected. And it's beautiful. It's really beautiful. And it's... Just, I got, you know, I have a huge weakness for games with a really well-realized, explorable, expansive, detailed world. And it's just, it's a knockout. It's almost too much. Particularly some of the cities. They're almost too good.
Hmm.
They're so big that there aren't going to be, it's not that deceptive theme park forced perspective scale that World of Warcraft cities have. That cute model train town that isn't anything like as big as it seems. Like Stormwind, you know, where you've got 300, 400 people crammed into small areas, so it's always bustling and crowded, which is a feel that I really do love. I really, really love that feeling. You'll never get that in these Guild Wars towns because they're so big. They are so very much to scale with the way that world should be. But...
I've always wanted an MMO where I could, like, a big, realized city. like a cross between, like, I guess, like Midgar and Hangsha.
It's the,
you know,
I'm nowhere on their lore, so I don't know the names yet, but I started as a human in the weekend event. And the city that's there is laughably, comically huge and well, like, well realized. And it's actually kind of not, it's not nearly as steampunky or anything, but it's laid out radially in the same way that, Midgar was in FF7. It's got all the little districts and everything. It's a lot. Like, the game is a lot, and it's very friendly to you as a player. The reward systems are very, very good. Your ability to kind of, and it does really fun stuff where, you know, you've got your skills, right? Like, you've got, no, I do these things. But if you put on a different weapon, you've got a different set of skills. Like, they're kind of like something like, you know, World of Warcraft has all of these different things, and they may have a requirement for them. This thing changes the nature of your attacks almost entirely, based on what kind of weapon you have. And you get, like, a basic attack, and you have to use it a bunch in order to unlock all the more advanced attacks and open your bar up. That's very good. It's very clever, and it's the right way to address some of the kind of apathy that's gone on in other styles of games like this. If anything, the questing, such as it is, the participation system is just fucking splendid. It's splendid. They could maybe tweak it to be a little more story-oriented, a little less... I don't want to say trite, but the things you're doing, you're helping this farmer here, and you're helping, like, this group of people here, and you're helping these guys here. Because it's not strictly quest-based, the progression is loose, you know? You're left a little more on your own to kind of catch a whiff of where you should be going and what you should be doing. But as far as a single cohesive story, it's not there as strongly. But I've played one race of five, you know, or six or whatever there are. One class out of all of that. There's a lot on offer here.
Okay.
I'm not too put off by their free-to-play store stuff just yet. They've got XP boosters, which, I don't know. Like, barely, I'm in my teens, you know, I ain't gonna find out now, because it's just a weekend event. It's a level, you level all the way to 80, so maybe the XP gains really, really drop the fuck off later on. That's entirely possible, at which point you gotta start considering, do I want to pay real money for an XP booster? That's a little bit of a creepy thing. Your point system, your point-based economy, it's like you do your quest, you do, like, the little daily things, you do the dynamic events, and you get little points, and use those points to buy gear. You can get a booster for how much you earn of those every time you participate, like a 50% boost. Seems pretty significant to me, since that's the mechanism by which you acquire your shit. Mm-hmm. But there's nothing to ever be said about any of that stuff before the game is actually released. Any kind of economy, whether it's a free-to-play economy or an in-game economy, doesn't. You can't take its measure. So, but I'm fascinated by it. I'm really, really fascinated by it. It's easy to play. It's kind of fun to teach yourself to stop doing things that you've always done in other games of the hotbar spellcasting type. There's no spell that you can't cast while you're running in this game.
Hmm.
You're very much meant to dodge and move out of the way of enemy attacks. It's meant to be a moving, organic kind of experience when you're in battle. Dynamically shift from one role to another. Like, if you see people need help or some healing, boom, I'll shift over to my water spells. I'm playing an elementalist. And, like, start doing some healing and stuff like that, and then bam, pop back over to the, you know, one of the other disciplines or something like that. It's really, It's a thing, man. It's remarkable. What they've done is remarkable. Whether it'll be fantastic later on or not, I don't know. I honestly don't know, but it's a thing. And it's missing some shit, and it feels a little lifeless in certain ways because there's some things it doesn't really have, like, lots of dungeons in the game. And as a PvE player, mostly, that's a thing that I've always been really fascinated with. I like doing that stuff. I like five-man group content, and it's going to be light on that. It's got no raids whatsoever. It has huge public events, but no organized raids. But that's sort of offset by the fact that everything is just sort of come as you are, deal with it as you like. And the fact that it's got supposedly very well-realized, very large-scale PvP. World versus world. So I'm super happy about it. I'm glad I just went ahead and spent the money on it. It runs... My 5800 or my 5850 is like... It's just dealing with it, you know? And when I say that, I mean everything turned up to max, giving me at least 30 to 45 frames, you know? That way I can, like, drop it back down and get a little bit higher. It's time to get another fucking video card, though.
Yeah.
Badly. But I'm happy about it. The money's spent. It's done. No subscription fee, so that's perfectly fine. But, speaking of large-scale battles...
Planetside.
Yes, Planetside 2.
in tech test right now. That's where they are right now, is in tech. Not really saying it's the beta.
Okay.
But they have let people in. They have let... What?
They've been letting people in based on hardware profile.
Mm.
I don't know if you guys got this. I didn't get it because fucking Gmail's spam filter is idiotic. And it caught a bunch of shit that it shouldn't have caught. But once I entered my beta key... They, at some point, like, trigger an email to me, and it was like, hey, thanks for entering your beta key. It's super important that you click this link and go to the site and tell us your specs. Because, like, we're going to need those.
And you didn't.
I didn't because I didn't get the email.
Yeah.
I heard that they were inviting people based on spec, like, a couple weeks ago for the tech test, and I was like, well, what the F, man? I never got a chance to... I don't remember uploading a DX Diag or anything like that.
I don't either.
Right. So I went and I looked into it, and it was like, oh, there's a page on your, like, Sony Station account thing, which is sort of miserable to navigate.
Yeah, it is.
And it's, I can't even remember how I found it. This is before I found the email in my spam folder. They don't, it's not a scan and upload a diagnostic sort of thing. It's a, what type of processor do you have? Click here. What type of GPU do you have? Click here. Blah, 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 blah. So it's a real simple thing. So anyway, the point is that's what they've been inviting people in on. Different groups of different people based on their specifications. So that they can get, you know, that all dealt with. If you're still feeling just super optimistic about life and you actually want to, like, listen to what those guys say and base your timetable off of it, which is clearly a mistake.
Yeah.
Then if you want to do that, which I do because I'm a hype-hungry motherfucker, I really want to play the game, beta, in the next little over a week.
Yay! Sort of saying September release?
No. I don't think they ever said September release.
I don't think they're saying any release other than maybe, I think, still
hopefully
this year.
Still this year.
Yeah.
All right. No. They weren't saying September at all. They were saying...
You know, I was just hopeful.
They were saying closed beta. And I will take them at their word here because they seem to have actually said that they're talking about proper NDA-restricted closed beta. We really want you hopping in here and helping us test. This isn't a preview.
Yeah.
Some days we won't allow you to use air vehicles. Some days you'll only be allowed to use tanks, and we want you doing nothing but doing tanks. Some days we want you doing nothing but doing this. Some days we're going to ask you to do a weird thing. Like, you know, beta testing some stuff. Which tells me that the beta test closed could go on for a while. Like a minute. So, and then they'll move into open. And then, you know how this stuff goes. Open to release is kind of a... you know, sort of a soft threshold kind of thing. So I'm excited to play it, but you know, I want it to be good. Well, I'm a fucking video card to run it the way I want it to run it. I really do.
Yeah, I might have to get a new computer before then.
Well, we'll see. I mean, that's the thing. You don't know. You don't know. So.
But if I'm hanging up on driver, you know.
Well, that doesn't mean anything.
Yeah.
It doesn't. They're hardly built with the same engine.
True. Yeah. Plus, I think I'm just going to like reboot my system and see if that might clear out some of the, you know.
How often do you reboot your system?
Not that often. Not enough.
You should do that.
I know.
It's still Windows.
Yeah.
It may be Windows 7, but it's still Windows, so...
Yeah, that's why. Yeah, I think I'll try that.
I mean, I'm discouraging you from building a new box.
Yeah.
Building a new box is...
I've been thinking about, you know, building an actual desktop for a little while.
It's a good time.
And that way I can have my laptop, you know, when I go travel.
Right.
Anything else?
No, you know, I've got plenty to play now.
Yeah.
Will you play it?
Well, I've already played some of it.
Yeah.
I'm not like him. I didn't want to be, you know, Lucy on the candy line.
This always seems to happen, and of course, it's happening. It's happening recently with the fact that I decided to fire up Myst 5 again just to see if it would run, and it ran, and I started getting into it, and I fired up Burnout Paradise, and all of a sudden I'm playing Burnout Paradise on my 360.
Yeah.
Just because it's like, oh man, I remember the fun of this thing. Oh, it looks so great. I mean, you were over here, and I just did that one amazing wreck where I just flew off the side of the road, and I was like, oh, that's great! But, so, a game hits the sale thing, and everybody in the Steam thread on COG is like, man, that thing keeps going on sale, I should get that. And everybody's like, you should, yes, get that. And the one that everybody's doing, and the ones that posted screenshots, because it all kind of rolls back around, is Just Cause 2.
Oh, yeah.
That's a fun one.
It's been a while since I've fired her up and just fucked around, but... It eats at me every now and again to be like, just go, just do it, just go.
And you don't need to do anything special, just run around.
No playing, just
car surf for a little while and then go parachute.
I don't know, I did
just
both.
Just fucking off.
I actually did both and got an enormous amount of enjoyment out of it. I played the game and, like, used all sorts of fucking cheats and mods to do it. And I found that... I would never like invincible myself.
No, but like the Superman mod, I like.
I didn't like the Superman mod. I didn't. I thought it did some weird stuff to how he moved. Really, all I ever used, and I actually loved it, was the parachute with the rocket jets on it.
Yeah,
like that was great, and I thought it moved kind of the way that it was supposed to. And Superman mod was like based off of that, but the.
Yeah.
Physics were all like inside out.
Physics really fucked up on that. It was easier to control with the parachute mod.
Yeah. I liked it a lot. I just gave myself, I cheated and gave myself like the infinite like rockets on parachute. That I never used like, you know, some crappy plebeian parachute.
Yeah.
I used fancy rocket chute.
Speaking of, Leecon says that Just Cause 2 is the ultimate screw story. I fart parachutes game.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is.
I mean, it really is. I don't mean to say that like you can't do that. I found that like a mixture of the two was pretty fun. Although most of my time was just spent, I think what I enjoyed was taking over the little pieces of territory.
Yeah,
that's really what
you come
it was.
To territory. I'm like, oh, hey, you know, I've got a few things here. What? Let me see.
Yeah, let me just take this. Or, like, let me take this. Yeah. And, like just taking those. There's the story. Okay, you're right. Didn't amount to a whole lot. God damn it, that game, dude.
It's
still kind of like doesn't make sense.
Mm.
The size of the game, the game's actual like size in gigabytes versus like
size of the world.
Size when you're in there playing it really makes no sense. It's like, I don't know.
When a game like Rage, I think, is 30 gigs?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
Jeez.
Or Force Unleashed.
Well,
fancy texture streaming data.
Yeah, really.
Fear was 14, I think, according to my thing, Fear's like 14 gigs, but Fear 3 is only like 6.
Yeah, so like Just Cause 2 is like 6 gigs or something.
7, you're right, 6 or 7 gigs. But
something like, that we would consider to be pretty
small.
Pretty crazy metal. Small. Whatever. It's a really great game. It's brilliant. Fuck around game. Looks great.
I do like, you know, now the Steam sales, seeing like, you know, friends buy them, like looking through, like seeing like the whole list of like, you know, like one game with like all the, like, you know, my friends just bought this one. I'm like, oh, okay, let me see about that. Or,
so.
Peer pressure into buying something.
Well,
we don't
either,
have
either. Tomorrow will just be like, you know, a simple conclusion to the sale. Or
I'm hoping fire sale.
Or everything gets three on the end of it.
That's getting to be a little bit sad.
I know. I know.
We've got to stop this at some point. And by we've got to stop this, I mean, you know, the community has to take a little responsibility for rabid fanboyism. By which I mean Valve just needs to fucking release the next game.
Yeah, exactly.
So that I don't have to do the hard work of
acting
like an adult.
Normally we'd get some Batman talk in here, but only one of us has seen it, so we're not
I could have gone, but I don't know, man. Maybe I'll be wrong when I see it, but that shit looks both boring and way the fuck too long for me. I'm not in the mood. Like, I really needed to be.
I have a sinking feeling, given the way that I feel on it, you're going to come away, like, totally opposite and be like, I don't know what the fuck you watched, man.
But you know how I felt about the previous two films.
I did, which is why it's even more so leaning towards that fact that he's going to come away completely opposite from the way... I don't know why, I just figured...
That I'm going to love it?
Exactly.
I know.
I'm saying that all signs point to you coming out as being on the side of... exactly the way you felt.
Right.
But because it's like that...
Right.
There seems to be this greater...
It does happen. I actually...
Odd off chance that you're going to come away like...
I actually have done that.
This was the best.
Yeah.
Where,
why was it the best? Because this was his last one and he's done with it. I don't have to hear about it anymore.
Maybe. Look, I think... What I've said it before, I didn't think The Dark Knight was a very good movie.
Ah, well, Jason Hughes agrees with you.
About what?
Digital Hughes, he says, I'm sorry, he agrees with me. He says it's not good.
That's just what I've heard, man.
Yeah,
I have known a couple of people that have seen it. One guy in particular fell asleep.
Yeah.
I haven't read anything. I haven't looked up what anybody said. I've only talked to people who have seen it. And they're all like, And I'm like, all right. Okay.
My problem is, for a Batman movie, there wasn't a whole fucking lot of Batman in it.
But Jesus, that was the same problem with the second film.
I know, but Joker was more interesting to watch than it was with...
Okay, that's good, and I actually will not discount that. He was fascinating to look at.
Yes.
Everything he did on screen was fascinating, even though one time out of like five, it made no goddamn sense what he was doing, or the fact that he failed to follow through with the thing he was doing. It made no fucking sense what he as a character was doing. Him just doing whatever was brilliant. Aaron Eckhart as Dent, and for 3.5 minutes being Two-Face, was very, very good. And that could easily have been the focus of the third film, in my opinion, because he was good, and it was fucking shitty that he was only Two-Face for minutes.
Yeah,
he did one Two-Face thing, and then he fell down and died. What the shit? And then Batman was a complete emo fucking wreck the whole movie and sucked. And I don't care.
You were not going to like 3.
And I don't care if Christian Bale was whining about the goddamn suit in the first film. Every other jackhole who's ever played Batman had to work in a stiff rubber dumbass suit. Except
Watch
for
Michael
Adam
Keaton.
West. And he's great.
Yeah. Watch the original Michael Keaton one. I mean, you can see the way he's moving. Yeah.
Look, the profile, the shape, the image, the visage, the thing, that shadow of Batman is important because that's what Batman is. Batman is not a Spartan, okay? He's a scary, terrible thing that is going to be waiting in the shadows while you're doing your drug deal or while you're putting together an army of racist revolutionaries or while you're trying to, you know, fuck up Gotham for the millionth time. He's going to be there and he's going to be right behind you. in the shadow, literally and figuratively. And the image of Batman is extremely important. And yes, he's supposed to fight, but it's not, he's not supposed to have a... It's not supposed to be like a giant, you know, big old kung fu shenanigans thing. You know, not a big burly brawl. None of that shit. He's supposed to be, you know... I don't know. Fucking more Sam Fisher, less Neo. Or something. I just can't stand what it's become. And I feel like a lot of it has to do with not just Nolan, but with...
Christian Bale.
Like, oh, the suit's got to be a different way. Well, you look like goddamn Master Chief now. You don't look like Batman. If you were to fucking clip your stupid, dumbass little ears off of your stupid, weird, helmeted, stupid head, you wouldn't look like anything. It's not... Jesus Christ, man. If I just wanted to see an armored guy beat up a bunch of armored guys, there's other ways to do it. You've just sort of like... sanded and scrubbed so much of the Batman out of these Batman movies. I mean, is that how I know you're brilliant? Right?
I can make is a Batman movie without Batman. Is
that you bleached the Batman out of the Batman movies?
Yeah.
What a bunch of shit. That's what the first one was great. And I know that it had a lot of problems. And I know that it was an origin story. But in that respect, it took its time. And that's where time needed to be taken. That's where you need to think and to ruminate and kind of like... Watch all of that fucked up psychological damage inside of Bruce Wayne ferment into the Batman. And watch him build the persona. And he was so specific about what it was, what the persona was, and what it meant, and how it could be used to do good. Or at the very least, to act against evil, if not actively doing good. And in the second film, he was just like, he was just useless as shit, you know? Until he conjured a bunch of space technology, because that was Nolan's answer to everything in the second film, was not humanity, not fear, not any of these things, but social networks and crazy, stupid 22nd century Star Trek bullshit. Well, fuck you. You know? More Master Chief bullshit. Fuck it. Fuck all of it.
Yeah.
So now, we don't even get Master Chief, whatever, is my takeaway from what I've heard about this film. Is it just... Whatever. I haven't seen it. I can't preach about it. There does seem to be a progression. And it isn't the sort of progression that I particularly like. So. All I know is... not excited to go see it. And... I got to sit in a theater for probably north of 3 hours,
mm-hmm.
previews and everything included, to see something I'm not super excited about seeing.
Right.
Joyless obligation. Rears its head again.
Doesn't it?
And you would know pretty well, because you went to the
I went to the marathon, yeah.
The marathon where you saw all three of them.
I saw all three.
The progression would be quite clear to you.
It was very clear. Enjoyed...
Or
one.
The regression, or whatever.
I enjoyed one much more than I remember enjoying it, for whatever reason. The first one, I was watching it again for the first time in probably, I don't remember.
What the fuck year was that?
5 years?
Yeah.
They should have had all seven.
You're a worthless motherfucker.
Yeah. But no, watching that again after how long it had been was like, oh my god, that was great. This was wonderful. And then seeing two, which I've seen, you know, the Dark Knight... number of times, or at least in pieces. At that point, I was watching that one just to look for certain parts. The part where...
you wanted a highlight reel.
Yeah, basically. It was the part... obviously, you're watching for the big action scenes and that sort of thing. The flip of the truck was just great.
And all the IMAX shots.
Yeah, it was just
I mean, the whole wonderful. Intro. I mean, the intro was wonderfully done.
That was great. You know, so you're looking for just little things like that and just little parts of the Joker character more than anybody else. And then, of course, 3 starts up and it's like... when 3 starts up and starts playing and gets into it, you start to sense the pacing is off. It's moving very slow, it's just... Whereas everything that I can remember in 1, or definitely in 2, seemed to move that story forward. Every scene was just... We're going to the next thing, we're going to the next thing, we're going to the next thing. Three just felt very slow and plodding. Just, we're trying to get somewhere. We've got way too much going on, so we're not exactly sure how we're going to get there. And just, I had numerous issues with it, so. But, anyway, that'll be for another episode to talk about. Probably by the time we do our next episode, both of you will have seen the film. So.
I may go see it tomorrow or something. I just, with the show today, and with, I would rather sit around and play the Guild Wars beta.
True. That's it for this episode. Speaking of Batman, we're going to fire up Arkham City or Asylum right now and see if we can figure out...
Take a look at his elbow arm.
See if we can figure out what's going on with his arm. But that's for the camera people to stick around and watch if they want
to. They don't care.
They don't give a shit. But anyway, that's it. Thanks for listening.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
And we will see you. We'll see you next time. I'm controlling this shit, aren't I?
Yep.
It's all you, my friend.